Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the November 12th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Personal preference will also not be the basis for any decision. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week prior to the meeting and individually visit the sites of the project. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. We have three items on consent agenda. I will read them now. We have petition number 25-005017COA for 312-314 East Huntington Street. Petition number 25-004705COA for 620 East River Street. And petition number 25-004909COA for 213 East Jones Street. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
Madam Chair, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda 1, 2, and 3 as read.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Nagel, I'll give you the second. We'll take a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. If your item has been approved, you are welcome to leave or stay as you wish. Moving on to today's agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Helms, so move.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Do I have a second?
Hamer, second.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I will take a voice vote on this as well. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the agenda has been approved and is passed. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda and have been posted online. Is there a motion for approval of the October 8th minutes? I think they got...
Madam Chair, I recommend that the minutes be on the agenda for approval next meeting along with the current meeting because I haven't read them, so it sure. Went there today.
The motion on the floor is to table approval of the minutes to the next meeting. Is there a second? Thank you, Mr. Coleman. I'll take a voice vote on this. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to table the minutes to the next meeting is approved and passed. We don't have any items that were asked to be removed, none asking to be continued or extended. So at this time, we will move into the regular agenda. Staff will present an application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit the presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to the public comments. The board will then enter into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. If you do not provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually, we will be notified and you will be held to the same standard. You'll have 3 minutes to provide your comments. If you are here with us in the studio audience and you wish to speak, you should have filled out one of your speaker cards, and I will call on you by name in the order of which they were given to me. First item up on the regular agenda, we have the petition of Five Quarter Architecture, Ryan Claus, file number 25-00-4478, COA for 502 East River Street. And I will turn it over to you.
Good afternoon. Jody Brown, Principal Planner with the MPC, presenting 502 East River. The applicant is proposing to construct a new single-story building on the north side of River Street. The building will be between lots 4 and 5 east of Lincoln Street between two larger single-story open-air markets. The building will be 458 square feet and will consist of a 255 square foot kitchen and attached men's and women's restroom access from the exterior. This review includes both parts 1 and 2. The item was originally heard at the October 8th meeting and was continued to address 3 items. Item number 1, that the trim work uses a material that's closer in appearance to wood rather than the, and I still have a problem with this word, versatex. The applicant changed the trim material to true exterior and provided a sample at the October 8th, 2025 meeting. The other second one is the applicant confirms that the storefront has 55% glazing. The applicant confirmed that the south front elevation had 56.25 glazing. And then finally, which was discussed at the October 8th meeting, that the rear roof line is reevaluated to be more compatible with the front roof line. The applicant provided 2 options for concerns addressing the rear facade roof line. Both options included added pilasters to break up the expanse. One option maintains the roof line, which is option A shown on the screen right now, at its current height, while the other one, option B, bumps it to the height, match the height of the main roof. The applicant also provided information on the existing conditions, which include the presence of a tree, a mature tree on the northern end that would partially block the visibility of the rear wall from river. Staff recommendation is to approve the request to construct a new single-story building, either option A or option B, which are both consistent with the standards on the north side of River Road located at 502 East River as requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Are there questions for staff on this application? Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hi, Ryan Claus with Five Quarter Architecture. Thank you to the board for hearing this project again, for staff, all your help thus far. I'll quickly try to run through with both of these options and explain our thinking. We did go back from the last meeting and studied sort of as prescribed by you all, just to consider a higher roof line to match up the roof lines. That's what's presented here in this option B. To speak on that briefly, you know, you can already see it becomes much more massive, much more dominant, and we think it's much less successful for this streetscape along this corridor here. It creates more of a narrow corridor, kind of a blank facade that does not encourage any real visual interest or engagement with the public walking across the river walk. That being said, it does still meet the ordinance, and we would be okay if you guys feel like this is more successful to consider this. But we do think it's less successful. The original design, again, as Jody mentioned, we did add pilasters for both options. We think this helps to break up the facade on both designs. We don't think it's necessary because this is much more of a utilitarian structure, as we kind of established in the last meeting. It should be more of a shed structure, a little bit simpler in its detailing and not adding ornament for no reason. That being said, I think it's a nice touch. So if you all feel like it's something that's worthy to add, we're happy to do that. The broken roof line was a big point of contention last time here, as opposed to this. This was, you know, sort of the attempt to make that roof line consistent and carry across. One thing that I mentioned in the last meeting, I failed to articulate very well, but it's important to say really that our approach here is multifaceted, I guess. From the what I mentioned before, from the courtyard perspective, we intend to keep that roof as minimum as possible so that we maximize the views out into the river and to the horizon and the skyline itself. Doing this actually does allow the most visibility through that and creates the least amount of opaque wall or roof structure. Kind of like a bill of a cap. When you see this roof continue forward, if you're standing back here, the longer that bill is, the more your view is obscured. So again, we just think that that was first our thought there. And, you know, as you come around the building and sort of 360 degree walk around, then from the side, you know, I think also this really came up when we were looking at the two-dimensional elevations. And sure, it seems a bit abrupt and unnatural to break that roof line. Again, we studied it. We proposed it carefully. We think that it's appropriate for the various reasons. But we, from the 2D perspective, only tells so much of the story. Thankfully, we have all these tools to show three-dimensional illustrations and renderings. And we hope that these are helpful to really understand how, while it might have felt unnatural in two dimensions, when you actually experience the building, it starts to come to life and really feel more appropriate. Now, from this perspective in particular here, I want to point out the fact that, you know, if we were to make these roof lines consistent in any regard, we're really going to minimize this more tower element at the rear, which we feel like is more of an anchor to the site. It's something that creates that curiosity and visual interest to draw more people. Our intention, as was mentioned in the last meeting, we have to consider the riverfront. Of course, the owner very much wants to encourage traffic, people walking along that riverfront, riverwalk, and create a varied, you know, streetscape, something of more interest. And we think, again, that does it well, which is why we kind of landed back at hoping that you see our perspective on this option A. Again, I already mentioned it's utilitarian in nature, so we do think it should be minimized. And also the historic context of it. One of the comments in the last meeting was it feels like it's stuck on. That's not the intention. The intention is to make it feel much more integral, and we think it is. However, historically, a lot of these shed structures would have been very utilitarian, added on in a ramshack way, would have been expanded due to the needs to cover materials and laid-on yards for the shipyards. So we could have been much less, I think, attentive to this and still met the spirit of the historic context as well as the ordinance. However, I just want to note that we, again, feel like this is an appropriate solution. So that's the two options. I do want to say, because I think one would quickly come to the conclusion that, well, why don't we lower this upper roof line to match this roof line? To that, I would strongly oppose that for many reasons. First of which would be the overall massing and proportion of the building itself. You can't quite see it here because you don't see the front, but the paneling, the ratio of the openings, especially the openings, follow the ordinance and the height to width ratios. The overall massing of it, if we squeeze that building down, it's going to feel squeezed and not feel appropriate, and not meet essentially the spirit of the ordinance. The other big component here is anytime you have a first level in a commercial structure, it needs to have a visual expression of 14 feet on the first floor. This building gets very close to that number, although it's not a multi-story building. But again, I would be afraid if one were to think we should shorten this building, we're going to get further away from the intention of the ordinance, because this first floor does express that verticality that is required. So I hope we understand that and take that into consideration. Just to simply say, we believe it wrecks the massing of the overall building itself, the design of it. So quickly, sorry to be a little bit long-winded, but to just simply to close, again, we believe that option A is more successful. As staff stated, and we certainly agree, both meet the requirements of the ordinance, so we hope we're at a place where we can receive approval of one of these, although, again, we want to encourage option A because we believe it's going to be better for the riverfront. It was carefully thought out, certainly. And, I apologize for saying so much about such a small project, but I feel like it's important, especially when last time I got hung up on some of these items. So thank you. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kloss. Are there questions for the applicant? Ms. Woodfield.
Thank you. Could you just show us the four sides of the two options and then the view through those two market buildings to the tree itself? Because I think the tree blocks a lot of the view of the river. So we should understand that.
Yes. Okay, so this is the four as originally designed. The tree would be right centered with the structure here. And the canopy really extends, you know, kind of in that fashion there. The renderings, it shows up better. But, and then from the rear here, you see the difference in the four sides. So again, in two dimensions, I would certainly agree that this feels much more natural. But I think, you know, one of the thoughts that comes to mind is like a butterfly roof. It looks weird in two dimensions, but it's beautiful in reality. And that's a simple illustration, but it's all, you know, there's many parts of this. I'll hush.
Then do you have a shot through those two buildings with the tree, a real tree, or is it just a...
Oh, like an actual image?
Yes.
Yes, there should certainly be. You can see it's hidden back there, but there's a shot through. We see how massive the tree is. But it also, I mean, honestly, the building overlaid it really would cover it, you know, if the concern is the roof still and the views. But that is where it sits. And we intend to keep it as a crepe myrtle, so it will... It's probably already dropped the sleeves, but it certainly gets full very quickly in the springtime. There it is there, looking that direction. So again, you know, the illustrations get, or the renderings get fairly close to accurate on its canopy and how much is covered. And I think this next, one of these next sheets has that. Yeah, you can see there. Actually, it's even showing less, so it'll be even more screened. And I think it shouldn't, I'm not quite sure where we're going with this, but the tree, yes, it's a buffer, it's a screening element, but the architecture should be carefully thought out. I'm not trying to minimize that approach, even if the tree weren't there. But, you know, in terms of a mural, as was discussed prior, I think the tree kind of takes that idea away. We think it was fun, but not quite worth the execution of it, or the attempt at it, I guess. Sorry. Go ahead. Do you want another view?
Thank you for showing us that. I think, you know, having walked down there and studied this, I think that tree really pretty much blocks the view between those two buildings. So I'm not sure that you're going to see this much of the utilitarian shed as you think you are because of that tree. And I think I just also comment that I live near here, but I don't find many people walking on this lower part of the walkway. They're really on the River Street side of the river down here. There's some things that block people, so it's not like there's a stream of people that are walking on this lower sidewalk in the bottom right of your renderings. Just a comment. Mm-hmm. But there is the river traffic, so we do want to feel like sure. There's a... You know, you're not turning your back on the river, but it's a pleasant background to that beautiful river of ours. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Coleman, I don't have a question more so than a comment about option A. At the last meeting, I discussed that I sort of agreed with your idea for option A, but felt that one of the ways you could address the issue of the scale was to just raise the plate of that and still keep that form. And did you take a look at something that's really an option C, where you didn't maintain that original squat proportion of that section, but simply raised the plate up a little bit, which wouldn't really take away from the massing or the idea of having that front section sort of be its own thing, but still provide a little bit more scale.
I appreciate that. It was iterative. It was kind of like we raised it a foot, raised it another, and each time it went up, it felt more and more inappropriate, simply because it becomes more and more of a blank wall, no matter how we kind of treat it from that perspective from the rear. So, you know, we did. We looked at matching actually the bracket height, the supporting the top portion of the bracket. Sorry, I might be going the wrong direction. But again, you know, we believe – I kind of want to highlight that this element here should be celebrated. It's a simple anchoring element, but it is something that I think gives a good visual cue to the site for people back here. Because as you mentioned, not many people do walk back here, but that's one of the big things that the owner wants to encourage more and try to open up for users so that, that being said, this element, I think, plays into how that site is experienced from this side. And the more we maximize this and minimize this, I think it's going to be better in the end. It also avoids more detailing issues with integrating that bracket with the wall itself, the further away we keep it, Mr. Coleman. So that's, you know, again, we raised it a little bit here and there, ultimately getting it here just to make a simple roof line, but we thought this is going to be the most successful, which is why we kind of brought it back. We could have showed you an option C with that, but we didn't think it was worth bringing up here.
Okay, I get where you're coming from. I think that an option C probably could have worked, probably definitely better than an option B did, because option B to me definitely feels bad. But option A doesn't make me feel much better, you know, because of the size of that. It really feels overly compressed, but I'll leave it there and respect the position you've taken on it.
Sure. It, not to belabor it any further, but you do have the human scale here too. This is a taller structure, certainly. And it's not, this won't hit you in the head, this eave right here, you know, it won't even be close. You can barely reach it. So yes, I hear you. I also think, again, just minimizing that utilitarian element is the best approach, but totally see the merit in those comments. Sorry.
Thank you. Were there any additional questions for the applicant? Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
I don't have any comment cards from the public on this item, so at this time we will enter into board discussion and no further testimony will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I wasn't in the last hearing, so I'm reading the minutes briefly. I understand where they were coming from with the option A. I think that from a visual standpoint, option A is more interesting. I know option B is just being presented today, so I'm not sure what the other board members would think of that, but I just, from a visual perspective, option A is just more interesting. It's not that solid of a block situation. I wouldn't have really seen that much of an issue with the breaking of the roof line as it was originally, so I don't have much more to say other than I would support option A, but I do commend you for coming in with another option. I just think that visually is not as interesting as it was originally. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
Well, I think my questions to the petitioner covered that. I'm probably more in favor of option A than B.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I can't pick that up. Well, after hearing the architect's presentation and everything, I think I'm leaning towards option A also, because I guess despite the tree, if it's a crepe myrtle, it will be bare in the winter. But the rear of the building has more interest with option A than B. So I'm leaning strongly towards A.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
I'm still concerned that you feel like there's two buildings that are just put together without a lot of relationship to each other, and that, you know, to somehow unify those roofs a little bit would make the overall form building, quote unquote, more cohesive. You will see this building from the side a lot, not just from this corner. This is probably a unique corner, but it illustrates the two different designs well. So I guess I'm kind of the feeling that you have a preferred design and then you gave us another one that, as we say, isn't quite as interesting, and it's, but anyway, I think the roof is more cohesive, and the building as a whole would be more cohesive with option B. And there are things that you could do to make this more interesting, but you're just dealing with mass right here, and you have a preferred solution. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms?
I have no particular problem with either of these solutions. I lean a little bit towards A over B, but I have no problem with either.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
I also agree with staff that both options meet the standards. I also agree with most of the board members that option A best articulates that. And I also want to thank the applicant for developing the rear facade more with this iteration. Since this project is going to be experienced from all sides, I feel that the rear massing with the more the greater level of detail is more compatible with the main structure. So I appreciate the added level of ornateness back there.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I'll go back around one more time. Ms. Nagel?
Comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No additional comments.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Okay, at this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
Nagel?
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 2500-4478-COA. As presented as option A. As the petitioner has met the ordinance and the project is visually compatible.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve the request for option A as presented because it meets the ordinance and is visually compatible. Do I have a second?
Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That motion is approved. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Rose Architects, Kevin Rose, file number 25-003528 COA for 118 West Harris Street in addition. Caitlin, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. The applicant is requesting approval of a rear addition at 118 West Harris Street. Just a little project history. This has been heard multiple times by this board and continued each of those times based largely on concerns of visual compatibility and lot coverage. Most recently, the revised project was presented at the October 8th meeting, where the decision was to continue this request to today's meeting to give the applicant time to redesign the proposal to bring the lot coverage down to the max of 75%. So in that time, the proposal has been revised to reflect the comments from the previous meeting and has since brought the lot coverage down to 74.9%. So now that meets the standard. The previous and current images kind of show that. So this is the most current site plan where you can see it's been taken in a little bit here and just some before and afters. Of what's changed and it's your floor plans here, elevations. And some site photos, renderings. So just in reviewing this project, taking over from my colleague Kelly, we looked into the preservation brief 14, new exterior additions to historic buildings. So just to highlight some of that, the proposed addition is designed in such a way that designates it from the historic building. It would most likely not cause confusion in differentiating between the old and the new. The intent of the design, which has been revised several times, is to be sensitive to the historic building while expanding the space of the residence. With the intent of preserving historic character, the addition is smaller in proportion to the size of the historic building. limiting the effect on the rear wall of the historic house. The connection will be minor and cause minimal material loss in the process, especially considering that this side has already received some alterations with that addition that is currently there. This would be damaging or destroying significant materials, and craftsmanship would be avoided as much as possible because the size of the addition in relation to the rear elevation. Exterior features that distinguish a historic building, a row of buildings which can be seen, are most likely to be the most significant. So in this case, the front elevation contains the majority of the significant features, such as the ornate ironwork, lintels, decorative brackets, and portico, which will not be disturbed with this work. In terms of the existing conditions of the rear elevation, there have been significant alterations, most notably the aforementioned earlier addition. The addition is subordinate to the historic house, and the design will not overpower it and could be removed without destroying the building. And then just these are staff made multiple visits to the site, so just kind of showing different perspectives of what currently the conditions are, even from further back. But with that being said, you know, since this has been presented thrice already, staff finds that the proposed changes are still within the same meeting of standards prior. So with that, we'll just present our recommendation to approve with for the rear addition at 118 West Harris Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this application? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
My name is Kevin Rose with Rose Architects. Back for round four here. Thanks for all your patience on this. I guess I'd like to start by saying the first thing I said in the first meeting, which is this is going to be the forever home for Ted and Felicia Carroll, and they're looking forward to living here. So the next thing is I agree with the staff recommendation of approval. We meet all 60 standards. I love that Caitlin brought up preservation brief 14, because we use that as kind of our guideline for all additions. And there's several examples that we may be able to pull up here to show just kind of how using that glass connector proves that we're not trying to trick anyone into this being a carriage house. This is an addition. It's that's what the clients wanted all along. They could do a carriage house here and do an ADU, but they want this place to be able to entertain in this kitchen and be able to see their grandkids and their kids and spend the holidays with them. Some things that some of you weren't at the last meeting we covered, which was the addition that exists now is not historic. We have plenty of research to prove that in the previous submission. We didn't include it this time because we felt y'all probably tired of hearing from us. So we want to keep this brief. We are doing tax credits on this project, so we will be going in front of the National Park Service. Their scrutiny is not just on the outside, but it's on the inside. We will be restoring a lot of the detail on the northern wall that was removed when the most recent 90th addition was added. That shows in our drawings, and we'll continue to work with Ethos on providing that. Okay. Thank you. So this is basically the textbook preservation brief number 14, this glass connector, which is basically what we're doing here. I think we can all just agree that we're following these guidelines. The one thing that I wanted to kind of get into here is that what we're asking to do is not new to Savannah. And we have several projects both old, new, and mid-century that all are doing what we're talking about. This one in the lower left is a very successful version, in our opinion. This one as well, from the other side. If you'd like me to zoom in, I can, or can everybody see these fine? Okay. So we're not recreating the wheel here. What I'd like to say is that this connector as hyphen, as it's referred to in the preservation brief, which is kind of an interesting word for it, is not mentioned in our code, in our standards, or anything, and that this has been done all over town, and the public has been against it, and it's in existence, and it is not a problem. And since we're going for tax credits, we're going to be in front of the National Park Service, and we're going to have that conversation. And I have 100% approval rate of tax credits, and I feel 150% confident that this is going to go through. Our client would like to talk a little bit because he wants to be a resident here, and it's easy to talk about someone who's not in the meeting, right? And I'm hoping he can get in. He raises his hand. Is that how he can speak?
Yeah, he would be considered part of the applicant, so he just needs to come and state his name for the record.
Okay, he's online.
So, oh, okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
He's currently with his family.
I missed that part.
Yes.
Do we have him online?
What's the name again?
Ted Carroll.
He's not raising the hand. I will unmute him, though. He is self-muted. Can you unmute yourself? Nope.
No, not happening?
No.
Okay, well, there's probably some technological issue there, and maybe he'll be able to chime in later during public comment, so try to work on that. So to recap, I agree with staff. They've been wonderful, and Caitlin kind of having to pick this up from Kelly, and we agree that this project is within the four corners of our ordinance and the standards, and we agree that it should be approved. Thank you. Any questions?
Yep. Not so fast, Mr. Rose. Are there questions for the applicant?
I have just a quick one. Where does the homeowner or future homeowner going to live? Live right now, I mean. Is he in town or is he in another town?
He's in another town. Oh, okay. I plan to retire here. Yes. Yes.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
I have one. Is the structure that you're building strong enough to support flower beds and trees on the roof?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the intent is to put a garden and chairs and things on that and effectively to make a third story.
It's not a third story. It's a roof terrace. Yes.
Right. But with furniture and trees and appurtenances that would raise the visual height.
There's currently one there now on the addition, so we're not adding anything different than what's already there.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Thank you.
I do have a number of comment cards, starting with Mr. Jones. And just prior to starting Mr. Jones' time, he wanted to raise a procedural issue, so I have told him I would allow him to raise that, and then we'll start his three-minute public comment time.
Thank you. My name is Andrew Jones. I'm an attorney with Thomerson Jones and Edwards, and I represent the owner of 120 West Harris, which is the immediately adjacent building, and, of course, my client opposes this COA. I therefore represent the opposing party in interest, and this is a quasi-judicatory. So I hereby request equal time to speak, as has been afforded by the MPC and the applicant in favor of this. So that is a request I'd like to put forward to you. I would also mention that we have filed exhibits A11 through A18. They did not come in time to be part of the record, but they will be added to the record. So my request is that you increase my time beyond the 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. The procedural issue has been heard, and it is at my discretion, so I'm going to keep you to your 3 minutes of public comment time. And if you're ready to proceed, we'll start that time now.
Yep, I am ready to proceed. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have filed a 30-page letter of opposition with several hundred pages of exhibits. How many of you have actually read the letter? Okay, let the record show that two members have read the letter, only two. As to visual compatibility, since I only have 3 minutes for 30 pages, let's note that there is no contributing building within view of 118 West Harris that has a connector between a townhouse and a carriage house. Let me repeat, there is no contributing building within view of 118 West Harris that has a connector between the townhouse and the carriage house. Now, the architect has provided you with a map of connectors. It's your duty and the MPC's duty to scrutinize this map. First of all, only this area above the red line is visible from 118 West Harris. So that is all that you should be looking at, not any other examples. And let's look at one. He showed one example in blue of a connector here, 109 West Liberty. Do you see a connector there? That's the photograph of the building. Is there a connector there? No, there is no connector there. That is his proof of a connector. And look at these buildings here on West Harris Street and West Liberty. Not one of these buildings is a connector between a townhouse and a carriage house. We provided you 30 pages of analysis. Here are the buildings on Tatnall, Harris. Here are the aerial views. Here are the pictures of the buildings. They are not connectors. So, frankly, you should be throwing this application out because what has been represented to you is not accurate. Furthermore, you have a duty to preserve the historic twin character of these houses. They're visible from Liberty Street, and the elevator shaft and the addition destroy the twin nature of these. That's in violation of the Secretary of Interior standards and of the visual compatibility standards. And while your preamble says you should not look at value, the ordinance says you should. The preamble is wrong and needs to be revised. 7.8.1 says you have to protect property values because of their association with history. Your bylaws require that you look at property values, and clearly this is having a two-story spite wall with a party deck overlooking my client's property will hurt its value. In addition, this does not conform to the building form rule. There's an explanation on our 30 pages. This addition overwhelms the building in violation of the rules for addition, and it has a deck facing a street because the lane is a street under the definitions of the ordinance. As to the NHL, whether you get tax credits or not is a totally different issue. The NHL designation, the photograph clearly showed a mid-block building, 116 East Taylor Street, which is exactly these conditions we provided you with the aerial maps and other views. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We have Nancy Baker.
Hello. I'll just be very brief. I just wanted to say that any kind of a designer that comes forth and says that this structure can be removed without impacting the facade, I think that doesn't bode well for the conformity issues and the long-term aesthetic aspect of that. I don't think that is a great excuse to do something is because it can be removed later. And also, I think when designers say that, you know, this won't turn over, this won't be a short-term rental, this won't become an event space or a party house or something like that because this is the owner's quote-unquote forever home. Unless the owner has made some kind of deal with the devil that I'm not aware of, there is no such thing as a forever home. We are all temporary stewards of historic homes. We can all believe that we'll live somewhere for 20 years, but we all know that things change and that, in fact, this house could never be occupied by the persons who are asking for these structures to be built. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Susan Atkinson. And just please state, even though I state your name, if you'll just state it again for the record. Thank you.
Susan Atkinson. Very briefly, I just am opposed to it, and I just want to take for you to take a serious look at it. I agree, it goes without saying, a forever home is not an argument. Agreeing to put a rooftop is a permanent thing, so whatever happens now or in the future is allowing behavior and activity and life in a way that does not respect neighbors and the neighborhood. Even if they say they won't, it's allowing it, and we have no control over that once it's granted. The glass connector, it doesn't make it disappear. It's still a structure. Whether or not you can see through it, it's still a structure, and it's a massive barrier in the internal part and creates a massive structure from the main house to the what they call an addition. Looking at it, and it's a carriage house by itself with no center and without a rooftop, that's acceptable. It goes along with the rest of the building along the lane. But if you go and look at the house from the front, it's very narrow. Next door, it has an historic, on the place of registered, I can't remember the term, you know, registered historic places. You go on the side, you can see down the courtyard in the center where all the gardens originally were planned, and there's a tree blocking, but it's open space behind. You go in the back, and there's the big carriage house, and then to the left of the proposed structure is a beautiful open garden for all the way almost to Whitaker. It's just, it's not as simple and as it's presented. You need to look in the space and go, maybe you have, but it makes a huge impact, and it's massive. The front of the house is a narrow house. The back could have a conforming, narrow carriage house like the rest of historic Savannah in that area. So please be very careful, because decisions that are made, even though there are other ones that have been granted, it doesn't mean that everybody agrees with the other ones that were granted, or whether they're probably, I'm sure that plenty of people still opposed to the ones in Savannah that have been granted. So it doesn't make, just because it's happened before, a reason. So thank you for listening and considering.
Thank you, Ms. Atkinson. Richard, I think it's Patter.
I will try not to be cumulative. I'm Richard Patter at 218 East Jones Street. I believe that allowing a variance for the so-called connector will establish a precedent that will forever be an item that this board will be hearing on a more regular basis. I think to consider this connector as a structure, it take away the existing views from the street and from the neighborly properties. I believe and I just learned from an earlier presentation that the applicant unilaterally chose to represent that there were connectors in the immediate adjacency of the home that's seeking a connector, when in fact there are no connectors, and they were represented this board as connectors. That's intentional. There's a duty to care to preserve value, and I think that's what this board needs to do, and not take a leap into determining the so-called connector is an appropriate use under the certificate of appropriateness. I think this board will find themselves, is my board, I was 10 years chair, preservation board in Los Angeles. We had height restrictions, and people were starting to attempt to build them up, and we just decided not to disallow them because it would change the character of the neighborhood, but that's all we'd be deciding in the weeks, months, and years ahead. So I think it's a bad precedent to allow this from experience and And I think you've heard enough of me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Petter. Anna Habersham, right?
Well, it's a bad thing when the architect says that the what he's doing has a minor impact, minor material loss on the neighbors. I mean, this is a terrible imposition. A residential garden in Savannah requires privacy and it requires sunlight. And this is this building is designed as an STVR. I mean, that is the design. Whether the intention is to use it that way, the minute they sell it, it will be an STVR. They've taken all the components, turned everything upside down, destroyed the existing garden, split it into three parts, stuck it on the roof, moved the kitchen, which should be in the ground floor. They've stuck it in the back. I mean, everything about this design is anathema to the city of Savannah and to a historic building. And it started off awful. It's been beaten into slightly less awful, but it's a very antagonistic design with real dislike for the neighbors. And if these people want to live here, it's a heck of a way to start just barging in like this and destroying the neighbor's garden. It's parasitical there. They destroy their own garden and they just look at the next door neighbors. And also there's a huge hole in the wall on the east side that's being totally ignored and isn't drawn correctly in the illustration. So every time we look at that nice little front drawing, it looks like it's got a normal east wall to the carriage house, but it doesn't. It's got a 13.5-foot wide by 2-story hole in the wall and giant windows behind it, and it's all visible from the lane and from Liberty Street. The whole thing seems to really be a very it's not forthright in its presentation on any level. Should be denied.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Artis Wood.
Hello, Artis Wood. Yes, would you put that picture?
Yeah, that's the one.
Did you all get a copy of that? The pictures? Oh, here it comes out. Savannah still has a threatened landmark status issued by the National Park Service, specifically for continuity, for continually overbuilding into garden spaces between houses and lane buildings, exactly what you are being asked to do today. Allowing such actions add up over time, I want to illustrate with four pictures. When we put a frog into room temperature water, he will be fine. Raise the heat just a little bit, still fine. However, if we continuously increase the heat, he will die. A little bit here, a little bit there, adds up to a toxic outcome, just like allowing variances from our urban plan. Two, after giving my little boy a cookie, he'd always say, "More," and was such a good negotiator, I'd usually invariably comply. Three, have you ever wanted a second piece of cake? The way I respond is by telling myself, I'm not going to cut a whole piece. I'm just going to even it up. Finally, my husband Ray used to laugh, remembering how his father, a pastor, visited the Holy Land and carefully returned with a jar of water from the River Jordan where Jesus was baptized. From then on, he would sprinkle a little bit of it on babies he baptized. Before it was all gone, though, he would add some tap water, rationalizing that however little Jordan water was diluted, there was always just a little bit left in the jar. Let these references serve as reminders that little variances over time can be the death knell of our national treasure. please hold this applicant to the standards set by our landmark historic district. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Mr. Hunsrucker.
Hello, my name is Jim Hunsrucker with the Oglethorpe Planning Coalition. I would just like to mention very briefly, I perused the preservation brief 14 and I saw no comparable that matches this design. And I think that if that's being used as an example, the staff should be giving a reference to or an analysis using preservation 14 because it seems to be failing. Most of the buildings in the brief are commercial, and you cannot see the back unless you're in the backyard. They're not abutting properties given as examples. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hunsrucker. That is all the public comment cards that I have. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment?
Yes, Kevin Rose, once again. First of all, I'd like to respond to the public by saying some of those things I didn't say about it being removable, that's part of the Secretary of the Interior standards. That's not what we're setting precedent here. Also, there is a roof terrace there now, which does not count as a story in our ordinance, which still does not count as a story in our ordinance. There are plenty of these connectors all over, and we can pick apart figure ground study all we want, right? I think at the last meeting, you all heard that it was 90% correct. I did not say that this time. I regret it. Lawyers will find that 10% and run with it. I'm an architect. I'm a designer, preservationist, and I'm not a lawyer. So I do apologize for not saying that once again during this meeting. Hopefully I can find these other figure ground studies. And I would like to focus on 20 West Harris Street, which is indeed in the next block from here. Mr. Jones said that there weren't any. We can clearly see the connector here and here in bluish green. Can everyone see that? Do I need to zoom in? That is one of many in this neighborhood that are represented here. I believe this one is the closest to what we're doing, although it's a little thicker than ours. Ours is narrower. And my response to the public is I hear a lot of opinion, a lot of personal preference. I don't hear anything that has anything to do with our ordinance. And I agree with Artist Wood that we should use the standards and y'all should vote on it. And this is approvable because it is within the four corners of our standards and our ordinance. And it has been done. It will continue to be done. And we can pretend like this is precedent, it is not. There's historic buildings that have done this all over town. The figure ground studies that we show have all of them in there. So I'm just gonna say thank you all for your time. And I hope that you see it the way that the ordinance, the staff, and myself see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
Would I be able to ask a question to staff concerning the threat to the landmark district? Can you guys on record confirm that that proposed design is, or the concern with the connector piece is only pertaining to corner lots?
That appears to be the case. And also, just on record, point of clarification, National Park Service came out at the end of, I believe it was 2022, saying they were not using that metric anymore and that the threatened status was no longer in place, although it's not saying necessarily things are out of the woods, but that they're just not using that system anymore. So technically, it's not in threatened status.
Thank you. I guess my comments are the same as they have been, or as the previous meeting. I've struggled to find in this ordinance a place that doesn't allow this connector. It's been cited by public comment. The one item on visual compatibility of rhythm of structures on streets, I'm interpreting that as visibility from the street. Mm-hmm. A rhythm of solids and voids in the facades visible from the public right of way shall be visibly compatible with the contributing buildings and structures to which it's visually related. This is not going to be directly visible from the public right of way. So, but the rhythm of the space between would not be. No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms.
Robert Helms. The more I look at this project, the less I like it. I tend to agree with the person who commented that anybody who starts off by saying that this is the forever home and we can take it off if we need to. I put my hand on my wallet. I'm afraid I don't much like this project, and I suspect it is not in conformity. But
thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Woodfield.
I feel like we've seen this four times. Everyone is working hard to somehow make this fit. It seems it's complying with the ordinances, and our job is to accept the ordinances. And I'm just baffled. I mean, I don't like the solution. I'll hold any other comments for now.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
I have a quick request, Caitlin. Would you put up your staff recommendation on the screen for us to look at? So the staff recommendation is to approve the request for the rear addition at 118 West Harris as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. So our staff has determined this to be acceptable for our standards. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman?
I have no comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I agree that our purpose on this board is to make sure that the ordinances are followed, and this is not in relativity to what we like or don't like or what we think should be or not be. I also disagree with that. This does not comply with the ordinances because visual compatibility is a very strong ordinance within the standards for a COA to approve this. It is visible from Liberty Lane, which is a public right-of-way. It's also visible from Barnard Street. I happen to live really close by, and so I know that because I've seen it. And it is visible from Liberty Street because that lot in front of it is completely void of anything. So as of right now, it's actually visible from Liberty Street as well. The only thing saving it is the neighbor's cone-shaped trees, which could disappear tomorrow. So we shouldn't count that as covering it because those trees are not permanent. I disagree that it does not disrupt the voids between the historic buildings, especially its twin building, 120 West Harris. And the elevator shaft is just unfortunate for that, the obstructing, you know, so high up, you can definitely see it from everywhere, but it also obstructs the rhythm between that, the voids, and the property next door. So I don't think it is about, you know, following the ordinances and saying that it does comply, because there is the visual compatibility factor, which I don't believe is met. I think it does overwhelm the structure, the contributing structure to which it's attached. And it's a very tall connector. So to call it just a hyphen or a connector at that point, I mean, it is with the elevator shaft and everything there, it is really an overwhelming structure to its contributing structure. I think that having no building with a hyphen within its visual compatibility within its site of this property matters as well. I mean, we've applied these same reasonings to other things that we've seen up, we've seen and we've heard. So we can't just wishy-washily say, well, this is fine because it's a pretty connector. But we have denied others that have also, you know, in terms of elevator shafts, we've seen this a lot, that have been very similar, that disrupt the historic property next to it. We can't just say yes to some and no to others. So for that reason, I think that we don't necessarily meet all the ordinances here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Hamer, back over to you.
No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms.
I would just point out that if we're going to take a view of the the ordinances as being written and permitting this, we should also have imposed that same standard on some of the buildings that we have approved before, like 2024 East Oglethorpe, which was definitely out of scale. And I agree with Mrs. Nagel that this building is not visually compatible with its neighbors, which is why its neighbors are complaining so vociferously.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Woodfield.
I appreciate how well you articulated that, Ms. Nagel. I think, yes, the source of this is that it's not the building, even though we've tried to help shape it or work on some of its more obvious problems. It is still not visually compatible with its neighbors, its context. And that's my final comment.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that the neighbors and people opposing this were very articulate and hit on some good points. And Mr. Jones apparently was some kind of attorney in the courtroom because he concisely made his point. But I don't think that that I changed my position on this, that I think we've been through this and there were adjustments made, and I think it is visually compatible. The fact that it can be seen from all those directions means that it needs to be visually compatible, and I think it is. And Mrs. Woods needs to bring a cake in next time she does this so we can all have a taste of it, because it looks pretty good in the picture here. So anyway, I support staff recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman?
Still no comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
I'll add my comments. I want to commend the applicant for your patience through this process. It's not often that we hear things four times. So I think we do owe you a decision today, and hopefully we'll be able to arrive at that. I also want to thank the public for your persistence and your creativity, Ms. Woods. Mr. Thompson was saying next time you show us pictures of cake, you should bring us some cake. But we certainly understand the passion with which we all try to protect the National Landmark Historic District, which we live in and enjoy. So your comments are not lost. They are appreciated. And Mr. Jones, I want to assure you that I did read through all 27 pages, and now I understand 35 pages. So it was not lost, even though you didn't have the time to go through it all. It was read by me, and I'm sure some of my fellow board members. So again, thank you everyone for your time and patience as we work through this process. I will open the floor for a motion.
Thompson.
Mr. Thompson, the floor is yours.
Don't have my cheat sheet with me, but on here. So, the Savannah Historic District Board of Review recommends approval of the request for a rear addition to the property located at 118 West Harris Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. And it's case 25-003528-COA, 118 West Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. The motion on the floor is to approve the rear addition of the property located at 118 West Harris Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Do I have a second?
Coleman, second.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
That is 3-3, so I will be the tiebreaker vote, and I vote to approve. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of signs by James, file number 25-004295 COA for 311 West Congress Street, an illuminated sign. Caitlin, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant's requesting approval to install one illuminated vertical projecting sign for the business at 311 West Congress Street. So just a little context within the vicinity. Here we go. There are several large signs. The closest one is Anthropology at 38 Montgomery Street. Let's see if I can blow this up a little. Staff located the COA from this project from 2013, which notes the sign being 26 square feet, 10 feet above the ground with an illuminated background, whereas the proposed sign for 311 West Congress Street is 20 square feet, 14 feet above the sidewalk with individually backlit letters. The height of the proposed sign is approximately 10 feet and the length is 1.7 feet in length. So it does meet the size maximum for this zoning district. So as you can see, there are a variety of different types of signage along this row in a heavily commercial part of Broughton Street. Just looked into some older photos from the ward notebooks. Granted, this is 1962, so we're not going super far back, but just to show, I mean, this is the building and signage that had been there. And within the ward, if you go right around the block to Broughton Street, 300 block, you know, there were similar signs, much larger at the time. But in this case of this one, you know, this was heard last month at the October 8th meeting, which was continued to allow the applicant time to address the following conditions. One was to reduce the sign scale to be more visually compatible. The same size is being proposed, but with a clearer indication on where it will go. The size meets the ordinance and is smaller than the vertical projecting illuminated sign seen at 38 Montgomery Street and relative to the size of other signs in the vicinity. Second was to provide a clear indication on the drawings as to where the building sign will be installed. An updated drawing provides a detail showing that it will be installed along the second story between the first and second set of paired windows with a 14-foot clearance above the sidewalk. And then third, provide a rendering that shows how the sign will look when illuminated. So this information has now been provided, detailing the method of illumination being a soft halo light behind each individual letter where nothing else is illuminated. Much like last month, staff found the standards to be met with this and thus maintains the recommendation, size back down, to approve the request to install one illuminated vertical projecting sign for the business at 311 West Congress Street. With the following condition, because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, ensure that the sign is installed through the mortar joints rather than the historic brick. Thanks. I'll be happy to take any questions or turn it over to the applicant.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this one?
Woodfield, can I just clarify? So they did not reduce the chain, the size?
Right. They did not want to reduce the size. So they came back with
the same size.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Caitlin? Thank you. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hello, my name is James Burnson, representing Signs by James. The customer wanted to, he come to me and wanted a big sign like Sorry Charlie's. Every one of them comes out and wants one like Sorry Charlie's. I built Sorry Charlie's many years ago. And I told him, no, we got to go by the rules. They'll only allow you 1 square foot for 1 linear foot of building. So they come up with 24 and a half feet. And so we made it 20 to make sure we stayed under that and to meet the code. And secondly, I know y'all hate lighted signs downtown, so I suggested we do the halo lit behind the letters so that would not be outshining light. It would just be behind so the letters light up. Customer really wanted the black letters anyway, so really needed something around it to light it up. And that's the most least amount of light that you can put on one. Even if you floodlight it, it would be more light. So I felt like we met all the standards and all the, we went by all the codes.
Thank you, James. Are there questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I do have a public comment card, Ms. Wood.
Artist Wood, I'd like a little clarification. Does every sign have to come before you or only if they're trying to get some variance?
Every sign has to be reviewed, but a lot of them are handled in staff review. So just ones that warrant further investigation.
So why is this here?
Every sign has to be reviewed, and so this one staff felt should come before the board.
Okay. I just want to mention, as chair of Scenic Chatham, that I hope we, the staff, and you all can, as you talk among other boards, the people that serve the city and the county, can realize that over time we are trying to diminish the size of signs. If you've been on Abercorn at Mall Boulevard and looked north, it's nothing but signs. And I understand that Sorry Charlie was a historic one. I guess it was definitely put there before zoning. As opposed to right now, you're seeing, for example, Enmark right across from Bethesda at Diamond Causeway in Ferguson. Have a look at the signage. It's low. It has lots more landscaping. 8 feet is, you said 10 feet. How high is this ceiling? Okay. We're looking at a sign from the ceiling to the floor, okay? This is a pedestrian historic community. It doesn't need that signage. We have many ways to advertise, and the lettering and all, you know, hotsy-totsy, whatever, it's sort of an advertisement. We've got to start saying, how can we be more special? And one of the most important ways to do that is to minimize our signage. I just leave it at that, and thank you for talking more about it and sharing with other people that work for our county.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment? It's up to you. No? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, you know, I've appreciated the work that Mrs. Woods have done for signage over the years. and you were involved somewhat when we were doing NUZO. And if you look at the current standards for Abercorn, can't build those kinds of signs anymore. But anyone who has a sign from the past, they never tear it down. They just change what's on it, you know, because the business changes. So they have rights until it falls down or gets blown down. So you're doing a good job on all that. Appreciate that. But the ordinance downtown in this location is, the sign is compatible with that. So it's not, and it's, I'm not sure how much downtown sign ordinance has changed when we did the news, though. I don't remember that, but I remember Abercorn that because that was a big part of the debate. So anyway, thank you for your diligence on that area because it is, big signs and billboards are really a blight on our, particularly our downtown areas.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman. Oh, sorry, Ms. Woodfield.
Oh, I'm...
Apologies.
That's okay.
Really wanted to hear from you, Mr. Coleman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel the sign is too large for this street. I mean, there are... It's in the, you know, market area, and yes, there's a lot of pedestrians, and there's a lot of activity, and there are some... corners and some kind of marquee signs, but this particular street where this sign is a side street, and it's the street, the signs that are on that street that this has to be visually compatible with are much smaller. I don't think any of them are lit. I don't have a particular problem with this being lit, but I do think it's very overscaled for being visually compatible with this street and its neighbors.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms.
I'll echo Ms. Woodfield's comments. It seems a little big to me.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Thank you. I will not go around a second time unless there's an objection to that from a board member.
I do have a question.
Sure.
I was going to ask in the second round. Not sure if too late to ask staff, but with the lighted component of this, is this across the street or anything from residential, or because it's Congress, I sort of didn't look into that?
We did ask, and it is not across from residential.
Thank you. No further comment.
Any further board discussion that needs to be heard? All right. I will open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I will make a motion, please. And the motion is that we deny this sign because it is at 311 West Congress Street, 25-004295-COA, because it is visually incompatible in scale to the signs around it. It could be continued if they will come back with a smaller sign. The illumination is approved, but not the 10-foot height.
Ms. Woodfield, can I ask you to clarify your motion? We either need to have a motion to deny or a motion to continue.
My problem is we had a motion to continue and a very, very strong recommendation to reduce the size of the sign.
Sure.
Which was not complied with. So my motion is to deny.
To deny. Okay. The motion on the floor is to deny the sign proposed at 311 West Congress because it doesn't meet visual compatibility standards. Do I have a second?
Sure. Helms, I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Nay.
Mr. Thompson?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Nay.
That is a tie again. I will be the tie-breaking vote, and I will say nay so that motion fails. I'll open the floor for a new motion.
I move that the petition of 3011 West Congress Street 25-004295-COA be continued with a view to reducing the size of the sign. That's it.
Mr. Helms, can I just get you to clarify?
To continue the petition.
To continue to reduce
the size.
With a
view to reducing the size of the sign.
Because of visual compatibility?
Because of visual compatibility.
Okay, thank you, sir. The motion on the floor is to continue to allow the applicant to reduce the size to better meet visual compatibility standards. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. How do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That motion is continued. Do we have to give a date certain?
Yes.
What is the date of our next meeting?
The next meeting is December.
December 10th? All right, that motion is continued to the December 10th meeting. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Array Designs, Shauna Casera, file number 25-004101 COA for the 400 block of Montgomery Street, new construction, part one, height and mass.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. The shiver in my voice is totally because of the temperature here. So the petition we have here, I'll just address the request in the context first. It's for part one, for height and mass approval for the new construction of a mixed-use building on the 400 block of Montgomery Street. The proposed structure is almost 40 feet, 39 feet, 3 inches in height, and is compatible in terms of height. The building includes commercial uses at the ground level and residential units above. The site is a vacant parcel in the Berrien Ward within the Savannah Downtown Historic District, located at Montgomery and the terminated Berrien Street adjacent to the I-16 viaduct, surrounded by contributing masonry buildings from the 1854-55 era. The lot is 50 feet wide and is irregularly shaped. The petition was previously heard on the October meeting that was on the 25th, and the board continued the item to allow some design revisions and to give time to the city to address the flyover concerns and maybe have them look into this. And it was communicated to the staff that it has been clarified to the petitioners that they're allowed to build on the lot. And here we can see the site plan and the square footage and the elevations that show you the immediate adjacent buildings. Talking about the visual compatibility criteria, the height is compatible and is within the limit as per the height map. The proportion of the front facade, it aligns with the historic context and is compliant. The revised windows are spaced in proportion to be compliant, more compliant than previously seen, and the main entrance has been recessed and paired with secondary access points, reinforcing the traditional rhythm. The roof is compatible, and the continuity, the infill completes the street frontage, and the scale is compatible. The vertical orientation of the building also takes care of the directional expression that is necessary. And talking about the downtown historic district design standards, the height expressions that were addressed in the previous meeting, now they have been more, they're more pronounced to be 14 feet 6 inches and is now clearly compliant, and the proportionality is consistent with the adjacent contributing structures. The second and third floors meet the minimum 10 feet requirement too. The building form aligns with the contributing three-story townhouse / commercial forms on the Montgomery Street, and no front setback is proposed and is consistent with the block face, and standards are met. Thereby, the staff recommends approval for the part one height and mass, which is in our purview, for the new three-story mixed-use building at the corner lot, with 400 block of Montgomery Street because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff?
Woodfield, I'd just like to have you articulate a little bit more about our concern last October when we were going through this project, and that was that this is right adjacent to the I-16 flyway.
Correct.
And the flyway could be removed at some point. And there was a question about whether the city would want to connect the existing variant through where the flyway was and continue the street grid. That is something in the background. But I think we asked you to continue so that you could be the owners, architects, you for the city could clarify whether that was really in the works or whether this was a buildable lot that was not going to be affected. We didn't have to consider that option when we reviewed this project.
That's correct.
Could you just articulate it a little bit more?
All right.
So you yeah. spoke with the owners, you got some feedback from the city. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for the record that we understand what you found out and that that issue is put to bed.
I'd be happy to shed more light on that. And I think our petitioners have done detailed, they've created tables creating a timeline of the entire communication that has been handled with the city, with us. So I think the petitioner might be in better position to add, give clarity on that front. And yeah, if the petitioner is here, I'd be happy
Thank
to
you.
Defer to them. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for staff? Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the board. My name is Shauna Casera. I'm the architect on this project. Jeff Iannone is here. He is the owner. I have a speaker card in case he stands up.
He can just state his name because he's part of the applicant team.
Wonderful. I'm going to break this down into two separate things. I'm going to first talk about the building itself and the changes to the building. And then, Ms. Woodfield, I'm going to answer your question about what has transpired since it's actually the September hearing that we were at. So it's been a couple of months. As part of my submittal, my resubmittal packet, I did include a timeline of what has happened with this property, including what we've done in the past couple of months with communications with the city officials. Let's see. Will you help me pull that up? Okay. While we are pulling that up, first I'm going to address the building changes. We have reduced the depth of the balconies to 3 feet to make them compliant. I was asked to consider transoms in lieu of awnings on the original facade, and I've reworked all of that fenestration to eliminate the awnings. Change the size of these windows that come up this prominent bump out element at the front of the building. There's 3 changes in plane from this connector piece that attaches to the historic building next door. We come out farther for this main part of the new building, and then we have this additional bump out that now comes all the way to the ground. The garbage and how we were going to get the garbage to the street was an issue. I have reworked the floor plan to create over here on the north side of the building an open air but visually screened area that will house the 8 bins that are required for 4 dwelling units. And the last thing that was mentioned at the previous meeting was the exterior height expression. I think staff addressed that. And I would just like to, Mr. Coleman, I think that was your concern specifically. I'm requesting that we keep the building at the height that it's at. The reason that it is at that height is because of the contributing structures on the block context. And this being such an oddly shaped site, reworking the stairways to add several feet of height would become a huge challenge and really cause a lot of redesign for the floor plan. Can I pause there and continue to talk about the building before we get into Berrien Street? Okay.
Whatever your preference is.
Okay. I'd like to answer any questions about the redesign itself.
This is Mr. Coleman, and the issue of the expression of the floor heights remains a problem, because if there was no expression of the floors on the elevation, then having the bands would accomplish that expression. But you can't put a band at 14 feet and then have the floors below that band and say that that's where the floor is. And as long as it remains in that configuration, to me, it's not compliant. And so that's not an expression of the floor. The floor level is where the floor level is, not and where you express the floor level is the balconies and the doors. You look at the building next door, clearly the floor level is where those doors are with their consistent balcony. And putting a band is, as an architectural, you know, sleight of hand doesn't meet the intent of the ordinance. So I'll stand on that. I respect the fact that you felt you need to leave it, but I won't accept that as a compliant expression of the ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Were there additional questions, Ms. Hamer?
Hamer, I just wanted to confirm what the materiality, I guess this is only part one, correct? Sorry, never mind. Of the gate, but we can get into that when you return for part two.
Okay.
Additional questions?
Is the only reason for those bandings the idea that we're going to make this compliant with a 14-foot floor height?
Yes, that was the intent. And if you look at this, the red lines here, those are the required compliance lines. I thought it was 12 feet exterior expression on the second level. So we're at 14.6, which is less than a foot above where the actual floor is. And then 12 feet and 10 feet. But yes, to answer your question, that was the idea with the banding.
And if you were to just simply get rid of the banding so that the building was visually compatible with the older building next door, that would technically be incompatible and you'd have to ask for variance. Is that the issue?
I don't believe so. I think that would still fall under your purview. I don't think we'd need a variance. Caitlin? A special exception? Okay.
No other comment.
I have a question about that. So really the issue is the interior floor height, isn't it, in the standard? Don't you have to have a floor to ceiling?
If there was no balcony and door there, their bands would work, because there wouldn't be any sign that the floor elevation isn't where they bands are. My issue is that it's they don't work together is from that standpoint. So no, they could do it with the bands by the code and it would work in the ordinance, but you have floor levels that are clearly not meeting those band levels right now.
If I may, what if the bands were dropped to eliminate the sleight of hand, as you put it, Mr. Coleman, that the bands are true to where the floor height is? It means that I would not meet the visual expression, but it would be more honest to what's going on with the construction of the building. So I'd like to just say that, you know, I'm open to that. I'm also open to eliminating the bands entirely. I feel that they add to the character of the building, but I'm open to comments regarding that.
Well, I don't want to direct you as the architect as to your solution. I think the other board members have their opinions of whether you're successful or not, and I will leave it to their decision on where they go from this standpoint.
Madam Chair, I still have the question. What's the standard? Is it dealing with the actual floor-to-ceiling height in the building? And then, of course, the expression of that on the exterior, but...
I figured it'd be best to pull this up here. Okay. This is where it's going to get into where your heights are. It's floor to floor. Okay.
Yeah, that's.
So exterior expression of the height of the ground floor shall not be less than 14 feet 6 inches. So it's the exterior expression.
So it's the exterior. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Residential would be shorter. It would be 9.
So the second story is only required to be at that 10 feet, not 12. Because the upper
residential.
Two floors are residential?
That was my but end.
Okay.
That's how I did it.
Okay, understood.
Woodfield, so I guess for Caitlin, the question is, can we give a special exception? I mean, this is not a large commercial building in a retail center. It's in an office in a residential neighborhood. It's one floor of offices. Mm-hmm. It's not big storefront.
Yeah, I mean, I
residential
think
residential above.
Anything that's a measurable standard is applicable to have a special exception considered that they could apply for, you know, to meet it or to not meet it in this case, if it needed to be shorter than that.
So that's a separate process is what we're saying. It's not something we do here.
It is something that's done here. It's applied for through the city, but it is approved by this board.
And if the board considers, Rohan, if the board considers the bands as not the external expression of it, that is when we will need the exception. If the board considers that to be the external expression, then it meets the standards and it will not require.
Sorry, can you just clarify that? What did you just say that the banding, because it is an external expression, if we ignore Mr. Coleman's comments, that this building passes? Is that what you just said?
No, I meant if the board considers the banding to be significant external expression of the story height, then it is compliant, but if the board believes against it, they're free to.
That's what I asked. Thank you. You just confirmed what I asked.
Yeah.
And Caitlin, can you just one more point of clarification? If we're reviewing it as a commercial building, you can't review the first floor as commercial and the top two as residential, correct? You're either looking at it as a commercial building or you're looking at it as a residential building. So if it's commercial, it would be 14 and 12. And if it's 14 and 10, then it would require a special exception.
I think that's where it's going to have to stand because it doesn't necessarily have a mixed use standard in here.
Yeah.
So we may have to look into that.
I aimed for that second story to meet the 12 feet. I was 4 inches shy. So standing on the sidewalk, looking up to the top of the second story, we're talking about a discrepancy of 4 inches.
I know 4 inches, unfortunately, as my grandmother used to say, horseshoes and hand grenades. Okay, are there additional questions on the part one, height and mass of the buildings? All right, we'll move to Ms. Woodfield's question on the city's information on Berrien Street.
Okay, wonderful. I'm not going to read through this entire timeline, and this is part of the documents that were submitted as the packet, but I would just like to note the purchase date being in 2017, a ground level renovation, actually a full building renovation of the existing historic structure that my client owns, and the purchase of that adjacent lot with the property, with the historic building, was so that he could continue to expand his business. Almost a year ago, I brought this idea in front of Jonathan Mellon and Caitlin and Edward Morrow and was basically given the green light to continue to design, understanding that this being on Berrien Street is a unique situation. I would like to read from the staff report. Consideration of speculative future network changes is beyond the scope of part one review of the HDBR, but I do understand that this is a strange thing. So, I did the site plan review meeting. We were here in September. When we left, in September, the HDBR hearing, I immediately got a zoning confirmation letter, where all standards for the building were met from a zoning point of view, with the exception of the development shall preserve or reconstruct the historic ward pattern. And I'd like to say the historic ward pattern of streets and lanes in this location has already been decimated by a highway overpass. We've been paying taxes, and we understand that if the funds are appropriated for the removal of the overpass, this building may be moved. We understand that. We are not against the Oglethorpe plan. That's a possibility. However, we have tried to meet with, since the last HDBR meeting, we've met with real estate specialists for the city, real estate manager, interim director of real estate services, and the bottom line here is that no one can really give us any answers on whether or not the removal of the highway overpass is going to go forward. we believe that the overall cost of purchasing our building and it being relocated is a negligible amount for the whole reconstruction of the traffic pattern, the highway, and reinstatement of Berrien Street. And with so many unknowns, we would just respectfully ask that you honor this by right development and allow for the expansion of his business, 4 dwelling units. And please know that we understand that if Berrien Street comes back through, we will abide by whatever that legislation puts in front of us.
Thank you. Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, can I just say thank you for doing that research and being clear about it? I think it will make it better for everyone to have that already understood.
Thank you.
As and it can be.
Thank you. And like I said, the zoning confirmation letter, all of this is part of this resubmittal packet. So We're trying to put it all out there and trying to go about this the right way. Did you have anything to contribute?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, you really got a really wishy-washy answer from the city, apparently. Did you talk to the city attorney about the question? Because Well, I was in the business for a long time, and we encountered this over and over again, and the property rights overrule a project that has not been identified or funded, and that's what the city should have said. And I'm not the attorney, but you probably should go back and get a better answer to the question, because you have a building you want to build, and there's no plan to extend Berrien Street or tear down the overpass yet. But, you know, anyway, that's my opinion. I know you're supposed to give your opinion, but that's my opinion, is to see the city attorney and talk this through.
Jeff Iannone. So when I met with the real estate folks, they basically came in lieu of the attorney. My impression was that they just wanted to get a feeling for whether or not I was willing to just kind of put everything on pause. A gentleman on the other side of, on MLK, on the other side of I-16, so kind of, I guess, on Berrien Street, had done so, but he's developing in a different situation. And so I was originally told I would be contacted by the attorney, but then it was the real estate folks that came. And when we discussed it, it was clear that there really was no time frame. The city had just put into place, signed a letter that they were going to participate in a study with the DOT, and it was a letter committing to up to 5 years. So basically, I don't think there's anything for the city attorney to tell us from the standpoint of there's no legal offer, if you will. They indicated they wanted to do an appraisal, and I said that was fine. That meeting was set for October 29th, and the gentleman did not come. I don't know if the city's still trying to do an appraisal or if they just decided against it, but it was clear from my conversation with the three folks that showed up was that there is no time frame, because they don't even know what the study. My exact conversation was, even if you wanted to take down the overpass, the rest of the, you know, you have to figure out the traffic flow, and that's going to cost, you know, tens and maybe hundreds of millions of dollars. And they agreed. And so it was kind of a moot point, really, in that I think they were really just trying to feel whether or not I was just developing to develop or if I needed it, and I needed it, you know, probably 6 months ago. So anyway, I don't, I was told the attorney would be contacting me. He has not. And so I'm under the impression that they're not intending to do so.
Are there any further questions for the applicant? Thank you very much. Appreciate you. Mr. Jones.
Hello again. I'm Andrew Berrien Jones. I'd like to say some of the obvious things. You're the Historic District Review Board. You have an ordinance to enforce. It's the overlay. You're not the DOT. You're not the city. You're not city planning. Those are interesting aspects of context, but it doesn't matter that they don't have any answers, because those aren't the questions that you're supposed to be addressing. It doesn't matter what goes on with the I-16 or doesn't go on with the I-16. Pretend nothing happens and it stays there forever. Doesn't matter that this is a buildable lot. Remember the police lot over in Oglethorpe? That was a buildable lot, and 7, 8, 10 was enforced, and a street was required to be restored there. Your only obligations are under the overlay, and 7, 8, 10A requires the restoration of the street. That is what it requires. That's the only thing you're supposed to enforce here. Even if I-16 is there, they are required, if they develop it, to restore the street, or they can leave it as an undevelopable lot. Those are just the two options. That's all that you are allowed to say. They leave it alone as an empty lot, or they restore the street, which they obviously probably won't do. But that is your obligation. That is the law. The law requires you to enforce the law. That's one of the design standards. It's not a matter of discretion. and the bylaws require you to enforce it. So you need to do your job, and obviously the city may have a totally different view and everything may play out very differently. And then it will be up to other authorities, perhaps the city attorney, to overrule you in some legal process. But here today in this room, you have one obligation, which is to enforce 7.8.10A. Decide today. The applicants need to pursue whatever the remedies they have. And this may come back to you at some point after some ruling by some other board. But you are not those other boards. You are just the HDBR. You must enforce 7.8.10A. That is your duty. That's your duty under the bylaws. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment?
Jeff Iannone. Yes, thank you. So in that regard, I think we've done everything to make the property, should the city move forward with restoring the street, the building's detachable. We've had conversations, but it makes no sense that I would have a building that I've been told is buildable. I've been paying taxes on for all these years for it to be me to be told that I basically just have to sit there and hold it and pay taxes and I can't do anything with it, or unless I want to knock down I-16 and restore the street for other people. So, I just think we've done everything we can do to make it part of the plan. Should the city move forward with the Oglethorpe plan, the building can be detached and removed and not harm any other structures.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
First off, I would like to thank the applicant for making a few modifications to their design. I feel like this recent iteration is a lot more successful, and I appreciate the reduction of projections from the facade. As far as for part two coming up, I'd hope to see a little more development with like brick detailing and soldier courses and headers above openings. So I'm sure that's coming. And as for the floor to floor heights, it's kind of a double-edged sword where, you know, if we're expressing it as it is, the building gets taller, or we follow the ordinance to the T, the building gets taller, or we can just say the balconies are the exterior expression. And I do understand what Mr. Coleman's issue with kind of how the banding's acting right now. And I feel like maybe if we treat the porches as the exterior expression and then we just make sure like the banding's aligning with the bottom of the sills, I think that would be pretty successful. As for the next submission, some more information on like those light fixtures. So otherwise, a great improvement from the previous design. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms.
I'm sympathetic to the idea of restoring the Oglethorpe plan. I think it, for self-evident that the city were really that interested in it, should be taking this off the tax rolls a long time ago. As far as the visual expression of the building is concerned, I appreciate Mr. Coleman's comments. My feeling is that the building as it has been designed is visually compatible with the building next door. So that if you want to get rid of the glitch, if you wish, either the bands can be removed, the bands can be dropped, and then we as a board should be prepared to give a special exception, because in fact that makes the building more visually compatible with its neighbors.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Woodfield?
Woodfield, this is again just part one, massing and height. I appreciate the comments about the height. I think the massing is much improved. I think, you know, you've done a good job, you know, trying to separate the old building from the new building. I think the new building works better. It has a little more integrity and shape and design all its own now, and not just trying to be a continuation. So that's really, I think, a great improvement in some of the other little things you've done. I'll leave the study of the banding to those others. And I do just come back to this issue about the buildable lot, and it appears that, you know, all the actions and interactions you've had with the city and your own thinking about you could move this building if you needed to, I think we have to take that as a strong indication from the city of what their relationship is with you. I don't know that we here, I don't feel like I'm able on this board to say we're going to deny your building because something may happen in the future that you're not getting any indication about. But I appreciate it that you're willing to move the building. You're thinking about that. But I think that's getting into a very complex issue that I think we've got enough information and background from everyone that this is a buildable lot. It's considered a buildable lot, and that we are rightfully considering that building that you want to put on this lot. I don't feel like we can just stop this process at this point. That's my interpretation of this.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
I just found out that if my doorbell rings at home, it will ring in my ears way here. So I have a question about part one. Would the visual expression of the floor height be part of part one or part two? Or could it be discussed in part two to kind of get at least by that?
Yeah, with the design details, that can certainly come back in part two.
Okay.
You can put a condition that when it comes back.
You can make a motion that we talked about it in whatever we're getting. Okay. And then I have a request. I think I got this right. 7.10A. 7.8. 7.8. Could you put that up on the screen for me to scratch brain itch I'm having with that? Oh, I'm sorry, and I'm pretty sure I was involved in writing this
trying
originally.
Trying to blow this up a little bit. Yeah. Is it too small, or do you need it?
All right. So, I don't see any numbers. What am I looking at?
Streets and lanes. Development shall preserve or reconstruct the historic ward pattern of streets and lanes within the Oglethorpe Plan area. The Oglethorpe Plan area is that portion of the Savannah National Historic Landmark District comprised of the city plan established by Oglethorpe in 1733, continued to 1851, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line, that is to preserve or reconstruct the historic ward pattern. We had extensive conversations in-house about this, including with our executive director. And I think Rowan might be a little more privy to the conversations and what he has in his report. But essentially, I think it just comes down to that it is a buildable lot still zoned as such.
Well, a question I have relating to this is this section applicable? Is this on the map as Berrien Street?
Yes.
It is, all the way through.
No.
I don't think it is.
That's
not on the map anymore, but on Jericho.
Yeah, Berrien right.
Berrien Street starts before the map.
Yeah, well, I fall back on my previous comments, then. You don't need to go into any more detail. Okay.
If we're to go back to the map for the Berrien Street, continues all the way through.
Yeah, okay.
Neither.
I forgot which way I was going. Is it to you, Mr. Coleman?
Yes, thank you. My comment remains about this expression of floor-to-floor height. It's not arbitrary. The issue on this project and the reason it's a problem is because of the limited floor area of this project. And therefore, it's difficult for them to get the vertical connections because of these floor height requirements. Therefore, they are fixed at this height with the floor. Again, if you took the balconies off and they weren't there and that door was there, you'd have no issue. The expression would be applicable and there would be no issue, but you can't bridge the gap between the two and then try and say this the same thing. So I just want to see the ordinance applied correctly. We raise these arguments all over the place on everything else. And on this one, we're jumping through hoops to try and work out a height issue that is really a condition of the project. It's not a, it doesn't benefit our ordinance in any way, doesn't benefit the community. I don't think that the building next door drives the height of this building. They are compatible whether you add a foot or two or not. So I'm not buying the arguments that, oh, this is just a little small deal and we can work out these heights in some way. Either it's 14 feet six expression externally as one thing, it can't be both and still meet the ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Nagel.
I appreciate Mr. Coleman's sticking to the ordinance on the height and the expression of the height. It's just it's a black and white issue. And if we go wishy-washy on 4 inches or six or how we think it would benefit or not benefit, then we just enter a lot of gray areas. So that I appreciate. I think in terms of the lot being buildable or not buildable or our obligation to preserve the original historic plan, it's putting the board in a very tough position, and I understand where the petitioner is coming from. It's a buildable lot. They're allowed to build on it, and they were sold a lot that's determined that you can build on. And then we're put in a position to say, but we're supposed to preserve the original historic plan. And so I think that's just a really tough position for both parties that the city should probably intervene on and just say, look, we don't have a set plan, issue some sort of letter, some sort of statement saying this person owns this lot. You're not to be held to the responsibility to restore a plan and keep this person hostage from building. But right now, I think it's such a tough call, especially for the board and for the rights of the person who owns the lot. I just wanted to put that forward because I don't dismiss our obligation to preserve our Oglethorpe plan. I think that's so important. And that's why we're here. It is the Historic District Board of Review for that reason, or one of those reasons. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I'll go back around to you, Ms. Hamer. No further comment. Mr. Helms.
I think Mrs. Nagel's comment about getting a letter from the city that this is considered a buildable lot would be very helpful in terms of, you know, insulating this board from not upholding its obligations under 7, 8, 10, whatever A. I'm also sympathetic to Mr. Coleman's comments, and I guess that the solution that would satisfy him would be to get rid of the, continue the banding, but get rid of the balconies. No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Woodfield.
No further comments.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
No further comments.
Rohan, just a clarification. The zoning letter that was provided that is part of the packet does address the fact that it is buildable. And
it would be nice to see that for all of us. Thank you.
steps at the bottom of the first table. It requires getting the right.
Only until the world they actually do it.
Bottom of page one.
Go, yeah. No, back down. The thing is, the development of the property requires dedication of public right of way sufficient to reestablish Berrien Street in the location of the property. And that is where it just gets really tough for this board to make the call to issue something that goes against that.
Woodfield, it sounds like it is a requirement.
It says requires. I mean, that's a pretty definitive term. Yeah.
So having the building there or not being there does not prohibit the return of the Berrien Street. And that was my conversation with the city. They had asked me if I would swap land. And I said, well, you don't have any, they didn't own the land. The Georgia Department of Transportation owns it. So if they were to move forward with the removal, then they asked me if I would consider doing that. And I said, yes. I said, but obviously right now there's no land to be, you know, traded or what have you. So having a building on that property does not prohibit the plan from continuing. It's just a matter at that point, they would come in, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. You know, they looked at this in 2015, the cost they estimated to get the other, down ramps, if you will, to hold the traffic was about $80 million. The cost of doing so now, concrete and aggregates have gone up about 93%. So you're talking about probably $150 million plus for them to get the down ramps to be able to absorb the traffic flow that's coming in now. So that's why they can't commit. They don't have that kind of funding. And again, even if they do go that route in the future, having a building there and being able to use it for 5 or 10 years does not prohibit them from doing that. It just, at that point, they would remove it.
Madam Chair, reading through this and listening to some of the prior petitions, would this not be a case where the petitioner needs to get a special exception to move away from this that would allow him to develop this in lieu of this requirement? Because it clearly says to develop here requires that, but if he's able to get a special exception because of the uniqueness of this property, then that may be the pathway that would best serve everybody. It would be something that this board would be clearly able to understand, and the petitioner would have a clearly written definition that's gone through the proper channels to get it clarified to be able to use that property in this manner.
Yeah.
Could I put another thought out just from my experience of, you know, long years of working in architecture and land development? This might be a case where the city would want a covenant or a legal document that said, you know, you, the owner, would move your house if they required it. You know, so you get the right to develop it, but in the meantime, you need to be committed to, yes, you will move this when it's time to reopen this street, if it's ever time. But this is a complicated legal relationship.
The issue that we find ourselves in is that we requested the city attorney to weigh in on this because it is a legal action, and I don't know that it is within our purview to require someone to dedicate a public right of way, because that process wouldn't go through us. It would go through the city. And so it's a little bit.
I guess the reason I'm saying the pathway, because the ordinance says you need to do it, and we need to cover ourselves by the ordinance. So
sure.
I appreciate your issue, but I don't think having a covenant would do that. I think it does need to be something that totally relates to the requirement of the ordinance to clarify the allowance. And then all the rest of the issues can be worked out legally. But I think what we need from this board standpoint is, do we follow this ordinance the way it is? And if it is, then we don't have a pathway out of that based on the way this is written.
Right.
And it's in the letter saying the very same thing.
Right. I think that the problem is it is within our purview because it does go against the preservation or the reconstruction of the historic ward pattern. Therefore, it does fall within our purview and we can't look away from that.
And this letter says it cannot be done.
Correct.
But the letter suggests that this public right of way exists already. Or maybe not.
I don't think the letter suggests that, but I think it's requesting that they dedicate a new public right of way. So I think that's up to this board to decide how to proceed forward. We can continue to allow the applicant to seek a variance from 7.8.10A and get clarification. I mean, they would have to go through the city to do that, I would assume, or come back to us with a variance request.
What is the process for the special exception? I think that's what we would need to.
Yeah, I think we need to have a little more conversation on whether it would be a variance or a special exception, but either way that gets applied through the city. If it's a special exception, it comes back here. If it's a variance, it would go to MPC or Zoning Board of Appeals.
Right. Mr. Coleman, and then I was going to that when it got to be my turn was yes, but at that point, at least we are allowing the variance or the exception. But right now there isn't a variance or exception being asked of us. And that's where I think it gets tricky.
Sure.
So I think that would be from my comment would be yes, if we were being asked for, I understand the lot and it has basically if it was the lot like the police department case, they were able to leave the lane and still have their building. This is such a small lot that we're even having problems with the garbage. That tells you how this lot shouldn't have been a lot to begin with because it does disrupt things such as, you know, the right of way and sanitation, which is as a downtown are very important to me. So it goes to show that without the variance or the exception, we're building something somewhere where it shouldn't be according to the historic plan. So it would have to be an exception or a variance, or I don't see how we can go against something that is as clear as this requirement on this letter.
My suggestion would be that somebody continue this to allow the applicant to get clarification from the city on the proper path forward to not put us at odds with the ordinance. Hamer?
That would be my recommendation, but let me set the record straight on that police property. The city sold that whole area.
Yeah, that's totally different.
Okay, and the city had to buy it back for $2 million. I happen to have been...
It does relate because they're just saying, hey, you can develop. The letter says, go ahead, develop. But dedication of public right of way sufficient to reestablish, which would mean like, sure, you could build a little building, but make sure the street is still able to be there. So it's relatable because the lane was put back. They were building. Who bought it and sold it is beyond the point. They did build the lane. This doesn't allow enough space for a street and a building. And that is why we're having this problem.
So again,
Tom, this would be a repeat of the police lot. If they build, you have to buy back the right of way.
Right. I don't want to pull in unrelated items to what we're looking at today. And if the consensus from the board is that we need to continue it to allow for them to decide whether it's a special exception or a variance, in any case, we're not going to make a decision on it today. Then rather than talk ourselves in circles, we should probably entertain a motion at this point.
Madam Chair, can I ask for a little bit more of a clarification on the special exception versus the variance? Because we want the pathway that takes care of, item number that takes care of this area, and I don't know whether the variance does that. So we need to make sure through staff that whichever pathway we direct the petitioner will offset the requirements of number section 7.810A.
Is Melanie or Pam in the building?
I've reached out to Pamela, and she stated that she's
code. This is Pam. I'm looking at the code and trying to determine what the best course of action. And it looks like a continuance would be so that we can work with the city to make sure that there is sufficient road for both the building and the street.
Pam, I'm sorry. It sounds like you're talking in cursive. We can't understand you.
Sorry. Let me open my laptop. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Is that better? Okay. Sorry. I had my laptop down. I'm saying I'm looking at the code, and it probably is in our best interest to continue it and talk to the city to make sure that there's sufficient room for the building and the street and the redevelopment of the street.
And so don't have an opinion on whether it needs to be a special exception or a variance?
I don't. I'd have to really look at it.
I think that can be determined through the process beyond after we've done this, but we already know there's no room to do a building and street. So that part is already answered. It's really, can we get around approving a building there at all through this process that we're talking about?
Yeah. We would definitely need to go back to the city because they're going to have to weigh in on whether or not they're willing to waive their ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome. Sorry.
That's okay. Clear as mud.
Yeah, you want me to make a try?
The floor is yours.
I move that the board continue the application for the 400 block of Montgomery Street, 25-004101-COA, to permit them to gain clarity from the city as to whether the provisions of the ordinance 7.8.10.A1 actually apply to this particular lot, and if they don't, as to why they don't.
Okay. I don't know. It's a great effort. I appreciate that. I think that we have to continue to allow the applicant to, I'm trying to think the best way to word this to not put ourselves in hot water, a clarification on the interpretation of that ordinance, whether it would require a variance or a special exception, and then allow the applicant to reapply based on that ruling. Is that?
And this is Caitlin. Can y'all just put a date certain on it when you?
Well, we can put the pressure on the city. Next meeting is December 10.
You can do up to 90 days.
Up to 90 days.
Can we do the following just because then, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be an immediate answer, and then we're going to keep continuing.
Yeah, this is going to take until at least after Christmas and New Year's.
The January meeting is the 7th. Excuse me, the 14th. Is the 14th.
So February.
What's the February meeting?
February would be the 11th.
February 11th.
Correct. Okay.
This is Pam again. I'll reach out to the city attorney and find out how long he thinks the process will take and try to get some clarification from them.
Sure. Being that it took him 2.5 months to this meeting, February is probably safe. Can we say to not go past the February 11th? If they get an answer sooner, they can come back sooner.
Yeah, usually if it's like within up through February 11th, it's fine to come back earlier.
So may I suggest the amended motion be that we continue the application not later than the February 11th meeting of HDBR to allow the applicant to get a clarification on the ordinance in the street right-of-way dedication to allow the applicant to reapply based on those that decision.
Second.
I was waiting for Mr. Helms to acknowledge.
I thereby move.
It's a little messy today, kids, but we'll get there. So the amended motion from Mr. Helms with a second from Mr. Thompson. And Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That application is continued. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Pantheon Caitlin Corliss, file number 25-002579COA for 325 East Bay Street, window, door, and color amendment.
Afternoon, this is Jody Brown again. So this is 325 East Bay Street. The applicant is requesting an amendment to the previously approved rehabilitation and alteration work at the property. The revised scope includes repainting of a gate, color change on the bathroom addition at the second floor and on the first floor, replacement of the first and second floor non-historic doors, replacement of non-historic glass block window on the north and the east facade to match the existing, and removal of a door on the north facade to convert to a window. The three-story portion of 325 East Bay was constructed in 1854 and is considered a contributing resource to the district. The one-story portion of the building is non-contributing. The previously approved project involved the reconstruction of the bathroom addition, which is located right on the rear, on the second floor. The replacement of vinyl windows on all the upper floors, painting the exterior stucco on the first floor, and a new awning material and new roofing material. The current project and the current doors on the building are not historic. The doors on the first level are more appropriate for a 1950s ranch-style residential house, and the second floor entrance door is consistent with a Victorian-era-style house. The proposed main entrance door at the corner appears to be more suited to a modern residential property along with all the other proposed doors. A more appropriate storefront door should be used on the first floor, and a residential type of door consistent with the style should be considered for the second floor. Other commercial properties along Bay feature a wood and glass door where the glass is 2/3 of the door and the wood is like the bottom third of the door. The proposed doors detract from the historic character and cannot be deemed consistent with the standard. The applicant also proposes to remove two glass block windows. One is over on the north facade and the other is on the east facade, and to remove a door opening on the north facade, which is right there if you can see the pointer, to convert it to the windows. All windows would have an aluminum storefront system and dark bronze. Based on research, there have been a number of changes to the first floor over the years. Modifying the openings and installing an aluminum storefront system would not negatively impact the historic integrity of the overall building. And this portion of the work is consistent with the design standards. Staff recommendation is to approve the rehabilitation and alteration work at 325 East Bay with the following conditions. One, to reevaluate the design of the proposed wood doors to be more consistent with other contributing commercial properties, and two, clarify on the plans that the doors will be recessed at least 3 inches from the exterior surface. The applicant did provide, staff spoke with the applicant once these recommendations were put together, and they provided revised plans, and I will let them speak to them, but it should be noted that staff also considered those revised doors to be rather residential in character and not appropriate.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff? All right, thank you. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Caitlin Corliss. I'm an architect with Pantheon ADC. I just want to say thank you for your time today and for staff's recommendation. Our client and the rest of the design team will continue to work with staff if that's acceptable to find appropriate doors. We've got a few more options in mind, so we can just continue to handle that at the staff level if that's appropriate. Any questions?
Questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, I understand that the colors changed from your last application. So
correct.
We have this problem that whatever computer screen you look at, your renderings, they're not consistent. They might not be accurate. So if mm-hmm. we could please have a real paint sample, that would be much appreciated.
Sure. That can be provided.
Yeah.
Additional questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a public comment card from Mr. Jones.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. In general, I support staff's recommendation, though I think I comment primarily on this particular door, which is on the Habersham Street side. If you notice, this is a Greek Revival style house. It was originally on a raised basement, but not one this high. If you go in, you'll see what they did. Even though it's a brick building, they brought the whole building up an additional 3 feet and put in steel pipe columns. So if you enter upstairs, it's like a Greek Revival house. Downstairs is later commercial floor. So I think there's a great deal of flexibility as to what that looks like because it represents a completely different period than the upper portion of the building. But the main door in the front of the building really should be a Greek Revival door. Now, I know staff does not like the existing door, which is 9 panels over 2 panels. That actually is a standard form of door dating back to the 18th century, still used in the 19th century, but typically you find it on the back of a house. It's a garden door. So it's not an inappropriate door from the period. It's just an inappropriate door for this location. And there should be a Greek Revival style door. So the door up here should not be the same style as anything below it. This upper section represents a completely different period. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment? No. Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I appreciate staff commenting on the doors being important. And I agree that the front door, the main front door of this Greek Revival does not, the porthole situation does not match stylistically. So I would disagree with that style being chosen for that this building on the top. And I would just comment at that point, then the bottom two, which are very different styles, should also be considered maybe two styles that would actually, because they're both visible from the street and they are on the same facade. I think it's important to the three of them stylistically be compatible with what's in the area and the style of the building. Otherwise, I have no problem with the paint choices and the color choices. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
Ma'am.
I will skip Mr. Thompson. I'll come back to him. Ms. Woodfield?
Yes, I think these details do matter, and I appreciate focusing on them. And while staff may be able to approve these doors, maybe they also need to be run by the committee. But I do think those details are important, and you know, everything else will kind of fall into place and these will stand out. So good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms.
I agree with Mrs. Nagel and yes, Mrs. Woodfield, that the doors as they are should be rethought to something a little bit more appropriate and compatible with each other.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
I agree with the previous sentiment
that the doors need to be reselected, and I trust that this is something that staff would be able to handle. Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson, I skipped you, so I'll come back to you for comments.
Sorry, I had to step out for a second.
That's okay.
Yeah, I think the staff recommendation is good. I personally would like to see a sample of the color or have the staff look at that as part of their approval process to make sure the color is good there.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I am not going to go back around a second time, but I'll open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we approve the 325 East Bay Street project 25-002579 COA, Pantheon ADC with Caitlin Corliss, with the staff recommendation that it is approved for the rehabilitation and alteration work with the following conditions to be reviewed by staff because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, reevaluate the design of the proposed wood doors to be more consistent with other contributing commercial properties and per our discussion. And two, clarity on the plans that the doors will be recessed at least 3 inches from the exterior surface. And item three, that the sample of the door of the colors on the building be submitted for staff review.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to approve the application with the two noted staff conditions with the addition of a third, that the applicant provide color samples for staff review. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
That application is approved. Looking at fellow board members, do you require a break? I know we've been up here for a minute. If not, we can press through. Keep going. All right. Next item up on the agenda is the petition of John T. Scott, file number 25-004962 for 210 West Hall Street after the fact deck extension.
Good afternoon, Rohan. Again, my previous disclaimer still applies. So this is an after-the-fact request to approve a deck extension and a spiral staircase at the rear of the property at 210 West Hall Street. The proposal includes a 5 feet 2 inches by 7 feet extension to the existing second floor rear deck and the addition of a freestanding steel spiral staircase. The staircase would provide a second means and a fire egress from the second floor deck to the existing third floor balcony. The subject property is located on the south side of the West Hall Street between Barnett and Tatnall Streets, and the work area is fully within the rear yard and not quite visible from the public right of way as observed by staff. Here we can see the proposal that was submitted to staff, and I've highlighted the rectangle being the extension that is being proposed and the circle marking the location of the spiral staircase. And to start with, we had a conversation with the petitioner asking, one, for the requirement, what is the need for the extension that is being asked for, and two, again, the need for the spiral staircase and the nature of it, and the color, and other such details. It was told to staff that the existing porch has absolutely no space for two people to sit, and they just wanted to extend it to a point where they can put two chairs in their backyard, so that being the reason. And the spiral staircase, there the petitioners are is amenable to whatever color that is allowed by the ordinance. And coming to the interior standards and guidelines for rehabilitation, standard 9 and 10, to not damage and to have the addition be reversible. Both the additions are compatible in scale and placed at the rear and do not impair the contributing building's character. The standards are met, and the pictures kind of show in fact, do the opposite of show. That's the whole point. Where this addition is coming up, it's not visible from the right of way, and the relationship of material, texture, and color are compatible, and the scale is appropriate. Coming to the design standards, porches, the deck extension and the stair follow the requirements. There's no increase in overall height or massing of the building. The spiral staircase improves fire ingress, and hence that staff interprets that to be a stronger contribution to the building and the people that live there, and hence the staff recommendation is to approve the deck extension after the fact extension and spiral staircase at 210 West Hall Street as requested, as the proposal meets the standards for rehabilitation, visual compatibility, and the downtown historic district. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff on this application?
Just one. Why wasn't this handled as a consent item?
Yeah, because it was after the fact. We just wanted to ensure there is a conversation.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you. Would the applicant come forward and state your name for the record?
My name's John Scott. Thank you for hearing my petition.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, I want to say that this is after the fact, but I did speak to, I think, Caitlin and Kelly 3 or 4 months prior, and I was under the impression that it was a staff approval and it wouldn't be subject to board review.
If you file your application.
Okay.
Are there any questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you, sir.
I don't have any public comment cards on this item, so we will now enter into board discussion. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I don't have a particular comment on the project, but I do thank staff for, and after the fact, even if it could be staff level, for bringing it up to the board, because I think this happens a lot and then things change after they've been approved. So thank you for bringing it up.
I'll open the floor for a motion.
Helms, I vote the HDBR approve the application of 210 West Hall Street 25-004962-COA for an after-the-fact deck extension on the grounds that the proposal meets the standards for rehabilitation, visual compatibility, and the design standards of the Savannah Downtown Historic District.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. The motion on the floor is to approve. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the regular agenda is petition of Sotil and Sotil. Mr. Christian Sotil, file number 25-005146 for 301 West Oglethorpe Ave, non-contributing demolition.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Even though I don't think that I would have a conflict, I do have an association on the Civic Center project, so I will recuse myself from this project.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coleman. I appreciate your willingness to admit a connection. All right, I'll turn it over to you, Jody.
Thank you. Jody Brown again for 301 West Oglethorpe. So the applicant is proposing to demolish the arena, which is the southern portion of the Savannah Civic Center. They're also proposing to construct a stucco wall with joints at that opening. The stucco color will match the existing color, and cheek walls will be installed at the stairs, so if nobody falls off the stairs, and any openings will be enclosed with stucco, and the existing canopy at the east and west facades will be retained. To provide a little background on the Civic Center, It was constructed, it finished construction in 1972 to replace the municipal auditorium that was constructed in 1916 just to the east. The new building was designed to accommodate a sports arena with a seating capacity of up to 8,000, a theater with a seating capacity up to 2,556, a 6,200 square foot ballroom, and 5,000 square feet of exhibition and meeting space. In 1966, the city started to acquire land for the new Coliseum, aka the Savannah Civic Center. The area around the Savannah River to the north, Park Avenue to the south, Broad Street to the west, and Whitaker/Bull Street to the east were identified as the General Neighborhood Renewal Plan Area, the GNRP. This area was developed so the city could be eligible for urban renewal funds to construct it. Within the GNRP, the city designated the Coliseum Urban Renewal Project Area. Prior to the municipal auditorium, this area was predominantly residential, but had begun to the decline into low-rent tenements with the arrival of the railroad, and by the 1960s, the construction of GA-17 and I-16 caused further deterioration, and the area had a number of commercial and industrial uses. The entire exterior facade of the building as it stands features slim arches symmetrically placed consistent with the new formalism style. The exterior walls of the arena portion have arches outlined with cast stone and the inner portion filled with brown brick. This portion of the building is approximately three stories with another story that is set back and sheathed with aluminum siding with vertical battens on the roof. On the northern portion of the building, housing the theater, meeting rooms, and the ballrooms, there are smaller scale arches with an open colonnade that wraps around. This portion of the building represents as two stories with upper floors recessed on the roof. At the southern portion of the third floor is a glassed-in hyphen. We'll use that as our word of the day, hyphen, from the arena upper floors to the theater portion. Just to the north of the hyphen are two large squared-off sections. The very north portion is the fly loft, which is the highest point. Both of these recessed upper areas are constructed of brick and lack any openings. By 1981, locals raised the concern that the Civic Center was not flexible and it was underused. And by 1988, businesses and civic leaders, along with government officials, formed a group to study the Civic Center, and it was determined that the Civic Center was designed for local and spectator events and was not a convention center. In 1996, the city completed a 9,000 square foot expansion. This increased the number of meeting rooms, the number of seats in the theater, a complete remodel of the ballroom, ADA accessibility, and physical plan improvements. These improvements added recessed enclosures to a portion of the once open colonnade on the east and west facade. An ADA ramp was also added. You can see right here, if you can see the pointer, these are the meeting rooms that were added. They're little glassed-in areas, but they're set back. And then the ramp over here is also the ADA ramp that they added. The property is listed as a non-contributor to the downtown historic districts. Both the NHL, which periods of significance ends in 1935, and to the locally listed district, which period of significance ends in 1960. As part of the demolition, we evaluated it under the National Register criteria. Under A, the property is has a significance with urban renewal. It's expanded a little bit in the report and could be significant under A for that. B, there are no persons of significance associated with the building. Under C, which is both for the architect and the architecture, Vernon H. Noel and Ben P. Rizzert are the architects of register for the project. They designed the Civic Center after the Lincoln Center in New York City. And as noted, it was designed in the new formalism style. The exterior is primarily made up of brick and cast stone. New formalism experienced popularity in the 50s and 60s as an update to classical forms. It was predominantly used on civic and commercial buildings and rarely seen in residential architecture. Only a handful of properties in Savannah are designed in the new formalist style. Prior to their partnership, Nowell Noel worked for Bergen & Bergen, where he worked on the designs of the Blessed Sacrament School within the boundaries of Ardsley Park Chatham Crescent Conservation District and the WSAV buildings on Victory Drive. Rizzard is noted as designing St. Vincent's Gym Auditorium within the Downtown Historic District in the mid-1960s. There is no indication that either architect is a master. As noted, the subject building exhibits the new formalism architectural style on a grand scale, which is unique in Savannah. The style is clearly expressed on all facades with sleek columns, symmetry, and uniformity of the arches. The modifications that were completed in the mid-90s were done sensitively and do not negatively impact the historic character. The building is a good example of the style and retains a good level of integrity, and staff considers this building eligible for individual listing. Under criterion D, which is related to archaeology, there is no evidence support that there's an archaeological site at this location, although that doesn't mean that there isn't archaeology at this location. It just means I was not able to locate any. Based on the information provided and the research completed, staff believes that the building is eligible for individual listing at the local level under criterion C for its architecture. Under further evaluation, which is much more extensive, it could also be eligible under criterion A. Thank you. And my staff recommendation, sorry, I was so into that. My staff recommendation is to approve the request for the demolition of the arena portion southern of the building located at 301 West Oglethorpe with the following conditions. One, explore whether building can be deconstructed rather than traditional demolition, the materials salvaged for reuse where possible. Two, document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. And three, archival quality photos of the entire exterior consistent with requirements for HABS documentation. Other documentation consistent with HABS has already been provided. They have an extensive record of original plans from both the original construction, the 1996, and articles and histories and such. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Are there any questions for staff on the application? Thank you for your very thorough review. It's appreciated. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Christian Sotiel, I'm joined today by William Santiago in our studio, as well as Catherine Couch from the City of Savannah. We're certainly excited to be here today to carry on what's been a very public process now that's gone on for over 2 years. Steady work has been done. Probably the most important aspect of this was the City Council resolution in June of 2024, which is in the package, which called for removal of the old arena. And that's what's before you today. And as I think you know, it's in fact two separate structures that are independent of each other. So that's what we have prepared. Removing nothing more than is absolutely necessary. And as you know, it's a non-historic building, not part of the period of significance. But what's important is that this step in the process sets the stage for the restoration of the Oglethorpe Plan area in this part of the city. So we're very excited about this step. It's one step in a process with many more to come, but we appreciate your review of the application. We appreciate the staff's fine research and recommendation to approve the request. And the points that were identified, we agree with exploring materials that can be deconstructed or salvaged for reuse. That, in fact, will be a part of the process with the contractor, has been scoped so that we can, you know, make the best choices for efficient use or recycling of material or salvage of material wherever possible. We will be documenting, in fact, are documenting the building carefully per the city's requirements, as well as archival work and documentation for the building. So we agree with those recommendations. In fact, we have already done a detailed digital scan of the building, both interior and exterior. So we'll carry forward with those activities. But again, we appreciate your review. We appreciate the staff's coordination and the recommendation to approve the request. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sotelo. Are there questions for the applicant, Mr. Thompson?
I just caught up with your presentation on this on the city website, and I found that it was interesting in the sense of what you all have come up with, and also that it was well done. So then this was a little part of it, or you were kind of in the middle of the presentation. So I do have a couple questions, kind of stock questions I use for demolition. So would this building have an engineering study on it, determine conditions?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. In fact, and the drawings that are excerpted in the package were prepared by Raymond Engineering. So there is a full set of demolition drawings that they have prepared, evaluating the conditions of the building. And as mentioned, we do have all the original drawings. So we've studied those, but also studied current conditions.
So you got to go back and look at that. I don't remember that. But how about any hazardous materials in the building? And the building materials?
Yes, that's all part of that review. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions, Ms. Nagel?
I do have a question. Does this building, is it physically attached to the theater? Because as I understand, the theater will remain, but the arena will come down. And my questions are going to be, you know, what's left? What are we looking at for a while there with that stucco wall, and what is happening when that gets exposed?
Yes, so the building is physically, there's actually a 4-inch gap between the two. I know it's we all know this building well. It seems as though it's one large construction, but it is in fact two totally separate structural systems. So again, this is sort of a surgical removal that we're working on. And as you will see in the package, we're leaving the canopies, we're leaving the stairs, we're only removing the minimum necessary to keep on track with the schedule. What that will leave is the unfinished side of the lobby and the ballrooms of the theater portion of the building. So the plan calls for a very simple treatment of that facade, a stucco treatment. So it's, you know, visually coherent, you know, you might say, without embellishing it, without going through undue cost, because that portion of the building we expect will continue to be modified as plans for the renovation of the theater, probably expansion of the lobby, expansion of the ballrooms, new circulation, all of that will sort of provide a new facade to that building. And so the temporary facade or the temporary enclosure, which is part of the application, is meant to be sort of a simple treatment for that exposed work. As far as timing for that, I would expect it's probably, knowing the sequence that we're on, the demolition of the arena would take place over 2026, approximately a year of work in that. During that time, we'll actually be moving into the next stages of public input and design for the theater. And this background work going on there now in terms of program analysis, market analysis, operations, all those kinds of things. So the two pieces will sort of overlap each other. But knowing that design process, knowing that that will be also a very public process, that will commence also in 2026. We'll certainly be back before this board again and again as that part of the process continues. I would expect, knowing that a project like this is a 3 to 5 year process, knowing that it's going to take a year to remove the arena and install the facade, that facade may be visible for something in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that was my concern, is what are we looking at for how long? Because yeah, there's nothing in plan for it yet, and that we're going to have that facade that we didn't see for a few years. And
that's
I
right.
think that would be my main concern, would be what's left, how it's being treated and what we're looking at. But of course, this is just asking for a demo. So we're not really voting on what's being done with what's left. Does this demo include the City of Savannah sign that's right next to it. Is that part of this demo, or is that, you know, that round thing that says welcome to Savannah? Is this part of this demo, or is this not?
That is not part of the package at this point. The site, other site elements are going to remain in place at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And in terms of the aesthetics, just to finish on, the idea there is that the color and the treatment of that stucco is designed to match the generalized color of the building. So to sort of make it essentially a quiet temporary measure for that facade. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr.
All right, thank you all very much.
I do have a public comment card, and I feel like my eyes deceive me. Mr. Jones.
Can I make one small amendment to the comment? I'm sorry, it was my mistake. Mr. Santiago corrected me. The sign is, in fact, being removed as a part of the application. So I'm sorry. Please accept that correction. Thank you.
That was a turnaround. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
Yes. Hello. Andrew Jones. Oglethorpe Plan Coalition, we thoroughly support the demolition of the arena and for reasons in addition to those before you. Remember that this is within the Oglethorpe Plan area designated 1966. And what did the city do after the designation? Destroyed block after block after block after block. These blocks had a huge variety of historic structures, which have been documented, and many historical homes, my great-grandfather's home in Elbert Square. Many houses were moved with private money down to Warren Square, the Scheftel House, it's the HSF. Many houses that you see in Savannah were ones that the city had planned to destroy. So the bottom line is that the construction of this was a travesty. I mean, it was against everything that historic Savannah stands for, and it's really good now to see that terrible mistake being undone. And we, of course, thoroughly support the planned reconstruction of parts of the Oglethorpe Plan, and we thoroughly support the demolition of the arena. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. No further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
Having just gone through a issue with our duty to preserve the original historic plan of Savannah, this is a funny one, because I do have a love for this building. I know it's, you know, this ugly beast that everybody loves to hate, but I think the style is a style, and it was an era. Graduated there twice. I got my COVID shot there, as many of us did. So now we're all sad, but, we do have to stick to the fact that we are, in fact, we have an obligation to restore the historic plan of the city. And this is a way forward to that. I just hope we're not left for decades with this eyesore of a lot, but, you know, hopefully something great will be in its place. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Thompson.
I agree with you 100%, and actually look forward to a similar process being done when the I-16 ramp gets removed, because that's, as I recall, our plan showed about 9 acres available for the city to, or the DOT to sell and redevelop and bring back that area to what it was sort of like in 1950s, I guess. So anyway, yes, this will be a good project.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
Just a couple comments. This was of an error, and, you know, I think the arena style no longer works. It's a travesty what happened in that neighborhood. Anyone who lives and loves downtown, whole community, all of Georgia, all the world, recognizes that neighborhood is an anomaly, and it's turned its back on the city. So I think it's a nice kind of time, you know, that we know that the existing building that you are going to demolish is out of date, out of use, superseded, and it's now time to put our city back together. So that is kind of a lovely place to have arrived. I think it's going to be a robust process about what is put in its place. We look forward to that. And I just want to make a comment that I hope that the building that remains and the theater and, you know, the remnant of this complex becomes its own jewel box.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms.
No comment beyond those already made.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer.
I agree with the sentiments of my fellow board members. No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Instead of going around again, I'll just ask if there needs to be any further board discussion. Hearing none, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I will make a move that we approve the project at 301 West Oglethorpe Avenue, 250051 46, COA, Sotil and Sotil, non-contributing demolition, with the staff recommendations, according to the staff recommendations, that we approve the request for the demolition of the arena portion, the southern portion of the building, located at 301 West Oglethorpe Avenue, with the following conditions, because the non-contributing demolition criteria are otherwise met. One, explore whether the building can be deconstructed rather than traditional demolition and the materials salvaged for reuse where possible. Two, document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. And three, archival quality photos of the entire exterior consistent with requirements for HABS documentation. Other documentation consistent with HABS has already been provided.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to approve the demolition of the non-contributing structure with the three noted staff conditions. Do I have a second?
Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Thank you. And I would just like to add a note to the minutes that Mr. Coleman did recuse himself from this vote and the proceedings. That application is approved. Welcome back, Mr. Coleman. Last item on the regular agenda is the petition of Paul Bush, file number 25-005014 COA for 318 East Huntington Street, an after-the-fact alteration. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Rohan again. The petitioner seeks an after-the-fact approval to enclose an upper-level rear porch, construct a 226.73 square feet rear deck expansion. The resulting site coverage, staff just went through the numbers, wants to make sure, results in a 59.63%, which is within the limits. The zoning is DR, built in 1895 as a contributing resource. Visibility, rear yard work visible from parts of the public right of way like Habersham. There is no lane access to the lot. I'll use these drawings to kind of explain what's happening. Here you can see the before and after of what is being proposed. On the what is an open porch, they're planning to construct walls and add windows and cover it with windows, as you can see in this elevation. And this view, this isometric kind of shows. And here you can also see that the lower level also has gone through the same process and they have covered it. And now the application is for the upper level. It is partially after the fact because work is incomplete as we speak. The standard 9 and standard 10, the new addition, whether it's reversible or does it not damage, the rear location avoids direct damage to historic materials. However, the enclosure alters the massing and the character of the rear elevation. Lack of finished documentation makes it impossible to confirm visual and technical compatibility, so standards not confirmed due to insufficient details provided. Coming to visual compatibility, the vinyl windows, fiberglass doors, cementitious siding may be acceptable in the rear yard context. However, no cut sheets or finished details were submitted. The enclosure changes the rhythm and scale of the elevation, and hence compatibility cannot be confirmed without the necessary information. Coming to the design standards, the building form, although not new construction, the new enclosed volume changes the perceived form. No documentation of similar alterations on adjacent contributing buildings found, and hence the form consistency is not confirmed. The porches should be repaired if possible, and there is no particular proof of need for all the addition has been provided, and the enclosure allowed is allowed with glazing, but this is definitely more than just glazing, and hence staff feels there it is important to look deeper into this and get more details. And as I said, no proof of damage, historic configuration or material degradation has been submitted, and hence cannot take a call yet. And hence the staff recommendation is to continue the petition for the 318 East Huntingdon Street for a period not to exceed 90 days to allow the applicant to submit detailed product specifications, visual documentation, and clarifications necessary to evaluate the visual compatibility and conformance of the historic district ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff on this one?
Woodfield, the drawings are a little hard to read, and but I think what you're the proposal is it's a deck that's going to be enclosed with this upper area.
Yes.
The area with the upper balcony was already built. Is that correct? That was an addition that was already existing.
Are you?
Yeah, that upper, the top level balcony.
I believe so, but I'm happy to let the petitioner answer about the room.
I just think it's important that we're kind of clear that this is a pretty big addition in what is like some row houses, right? There's consistent, and this is now kind of a lot of massing that's added to the back of this one row house, and it's not quite clear what's going on.
And staff recognizes the fact that it is not lane facing, but there are parts of Habersham that it is visible from. So staff would like to let the board take a call on it based on the petitioner's.
Yeah. Thank you, just for a little more.
Additional questions for staff? The petitioner, please come forward and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Paul Bush, agent and drafting for the owner in which they are here and would like to speak as well.
Do you have something that you wanted to present, or do you want to answer a board question?
I'll answer a question.
Okay. Are there questions for the petitioner?
I think, as I just mentioned with the staff, if you could just kind of walk us through what is there now and what is being, what's half built or what's approved and what's new and what your overall intention is, please.
Okay. What we did is.
Do you want to put the 3D drawing up? I think that was a helpful drawing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right here.
Okay, the existing, you have three-story level. You have a basement, it's considered a basement. The basement, the first floor, and the third level. Now, everything that's on the basement level, which is the first floor, is existing, has already been existing. On the second level there, you'll see there were an addition to an existing porch, and if you look in my drawings, you can see the original support of the original balcony, and it was an open area, including the porch area there. It was sure where the new walls were built. It was open, and it was just an open balcony. We didn't touch the lower floor, nor did we add anything. But everything to the second level is new, and we're there when we start drawing. And that's what we were to present to you all. As an as-built situation, it was there and trying to identify.
On the third floor, was the third floor balcony there?
Pardon me?
The third floor balcony there.
Yes. There was
And then that covered a deck area.
That covered an open area.
An open area that came out.
The whole area there were existing. And a deck, even the portion that is being enclosed.
And did it come out to where the railing is that goes down to the ground level?
No.
Can you look up there? So this is extended?
No, ma'am. That's all existing. That whole level is existing. They're enclosed approximately 10 feet of the porch itself. The whole porch were existing, but it was open.
But did you say the lower level was enclosed?
No, the lower level was existing, and it's there. It's always been there. Nothing has been down to the lower level.
Under the porch?
Under the porch, nothing.
So what you're building or want to build now is from the lower level up to this upper balcony and enclose it all. Take away the porch and enclose it.
No, ma'am. You're still going to have a portion of the existing balcony on the second level. That's there. We only took a portion of that and enclosed. It's existing. It were there before and nothing were touched, as far as building something out in order to create the upper level. Nothing. It was existing, was open, but there was originally a porch there. And that's the one you see that they're attached.
Excuse me, maybe you could take the pointer and point at that on the drawing so we're having extra.
If you go to Google Maps Street View, you can go back in time and see what it looked like before the addition for a better understanding.
So it's not really visible.
When is the time? When did this work begin, I guess, is part of the question.
This work was done. The lower portion always exists. And I would have to have the owner express that to you and give you when he started the work, because this is after the fact for me. I came in to draw what's existing now and presented to you all. Maybe the owner can explain and tell you exactly. If you look at
oh man, this is a bang. Oh, here. It's 2016.
Were there other additional questions for the applicant?
I do have one. It might be for the owners, but how long have the owners lived in this house?
If they're here, can you like ask them the question? They're here.
Pardon me, I can't hear you.
That's it. The owners are here.
Ma'am, if you would come to the podium and state your name for the record. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My name is Mariela Oriana Nemanek, owner of 318 East Huntington Street. Thank you.
Sorry, what was the answer?
The question was, how long have you lived at this location?
I think we bought the house 2001. It's been a while.
And you were aware that you were in the historic district, right?
I think back then it was not the historic district.
It's always been the historic district.
Okay, well.
But I've heard many rumors that the border was moved. I don't know.
All right. Okay. I'm making my point that.
It is now. Yeah.
25 years, probably should have known that you got to get permission to do stuff on your house. And if your builder, designer should have known that too. So spread the word to your neighborhood because we encountered this.
We know this now, absolutely, and I apologize. Okay. I just shouldn't have trusted the previous contractor.
My job is to be the bad cop here. Yeah. So, all right.
But we've been taking all the proper steps in the last year. So, thank you to the staff for helping us through that process.
And were there additional questions for the applicant?
I have a question for staff. Looking at this image.
Do you want to save that for board discussions? Because we've got to go through. The only reason I ask is because we've got to go through public comment.
That's
and
fine.
Board discussion. Additional questions for the applicant?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I do have a public comment card. Ruth Conan. Did we lose her? Oh, she had to leave. Okay. Well, at this time, we'll enter into board discussion. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
Just looking at this Google Maps image or Google Street View, I would like staff to investigate if this structure was original to the building, the porch. Some of the detailing looks like it might be historic and of the period, especially given that it's stretches between both sister properties. That's all.
Sure, definitely. I'm gonna dig deeper.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I just feel like we don't understand the project enough. We don't have enough information here. And what we're presented could be a large addition, again, to this sort of consistent back of these row houses. So I think it needs to be continued, and we need more information.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I agree with Ms. Woodfield. I'm not exactly clear the scope of the project. So it's really tough to make this call because I think a lot of it was related to a prior part, and the fact that it's after the fact, I'm wondering still what is the after the fact here. And I hate to put that at the end of a long hearing day, but I just do think that it's not totally clear what is happening here, but that's my two cents.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I won't go around for a second round of comments, but I'll ask if there needs to be further board discussion. Okay, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Hamer, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue the petition of Paul Bush after the fact alterations at 318 East Huntington Street until the next board meeting. Or I guess for a period not to exceed 90 days to allow the applicant to submit detailed product specifications, visual documentation, and clarifications necessary to evaluate visual compatibility and conformance with the historic district ordinance.
Thank you. The motion on the floor is to continue the petition to allow the applicant to submit a more detailed application, not to exceed 90 days, which would be the February 11th meeting. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That petition is continued. That concludes our regular agenda. Wrapping up, we don't have there's a list of approved staff reviews, work performed without a COA. We have none. Items deferred to staff, none. Notices, proclamations, there's stamp drawings and inspections, items completed by staff. Other business, we do need to appoint a three-person nominating committee today for the 2026 calendar year chair and vice chair. I'll take volunteers, otherwise you will be assigned.
Chair, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I believe you served 2 terms now?
Yes.
And I don't know that there's prohibition like the president not to serve more than 2 terms.
Somebody else can,
bylaws say 2 terms in a row or 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm. So that leaves it open. Okay. All right.
It's very fun. I can 5-star review recommend serving in this role.
You do a great job.
Mr. Helms, that's a volunteer. Miss Woodfield, is that a volunteer? You made eye contact. And Thompson, that's a Miss Nagel. Thank you. So the nominating committee for next year is Mr. Helms, Miss Nagel, and Miss Woodfield.
So present your findings at the December meeting and you'll be able to vote on them.
All right. The next meeting is, Wednesday, December 10th. And that concludes our agenda for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.